Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Empire is back. Good evening. You're live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from outside the Imperial City as Barack Obama sits back on his throne again.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from Houston, Texas. Once again, and wow, what was that? What just happened?
I saying it for a year.
Yeah, fair warning. You know, I told you guys. You know, when the writing was on the wall, see, because I did this before in '96. You know, I went down on that Dole ship. You know, and you go down on one of those ships, like, you know, no, I'm not doing that one again. Is when they said, oh, the polls are wrong. Don't believe the polls. They're oversampling Democrats. Oh, my God. When you start saying that, yikes. You know, it's like you might as well be talking about chemtrails or something. You know, just no, that's never going to work. They're not oversampling. Maybe, just maybe, your candidate sucks. And we've been telling you that for like a long time, and you just don't want to listen. Maybe that's actually the problem. But no. It's us. It's conservatives. We're the past and all this kind of stuff. But I just do want to give a shout out to, you know, my friends and the team that we put together over at the Tyrell Corporation on the RomneyBot 5000. Whoa, did that thing exceed expectations? Spectacularly glorious. I mean, look, we had set this thing up early on to fail at the convention. I mean, that's what it was designed for. But exceeded expectations and wanted to go for the big loss. You know, that RomneyBot 5000, it just never quits. It doesn't give up. And, you know, here it is, performed flawlessly. So, you know, I don't know what people were expecting early on in this thing, because nobody liked him. From the get-go, nobody liked this guy. Nobody wanted him. Y'all knew, oh, yeah, he was the table scraps from last time, right? He's the guy we don't want. But the Republicans, they tend to fall in line, and they always nominate the last guy who lost. This apparently is the genius strategy that the Republican leadership has come up with for success, which is, hey, the last guy who lost to our last guy who lost, now we'll run him. And then the guy who loses to that guy, we'll run him, and then we'll win, because eventually, if you have losers coming up in succession, somehow this leads to victory. So nobody liked him. We didn't like his policies. We thought he was too liberal because he's too liberal. And everyone was against him, and then you heard all the TV people telling you to vote for him, and what do you know? You went out and you freaking did it. You did it. You did this to yourself. And then the delegates got together and were like, hey, we could shut this thing down. Nobody likes this guy. Let's go to the convention. We could shut it down. But the leadership, they went and they cheated. And you, who went along with all this stuff, you let it happen because you didn't do anything after it happened. You're like, well, we got to fall in line. There's not enough time. Not enough time. There was 9 weeks of that nonsense going on. You know, there's always enough time. And then, now here you are. What'd you do? Fell in line again. You voted for Romney. How many times did you vote for Romney in this thing? But yet you never liked him. How is that strategy working out for you? Not very good. Are you ever going to vote for anybody you like, or are you just going to vote for the person the TV people tell you to vote for? So, I don't know. What do you think, Rex?
Well, Tex, I mean, before we get into, you know, the whole history of how we got here and what we do next, I mean, I think the first thing to keep in mind is, you know, I had a feeling that they were going to throw it to Romney just because of the way the narrative was going. But clearly, in all the real electoral college analysis, I mean, Romney was never closer than 80 electors, and he obviously lost by 100, which is just, you know, a crushing blow. So, I mean, it kind of worked out as you expected. I thought there'd be a little bit more shenanigans with the voting machines and such, but I guess that Obama and the Democrats and the Chicago machine proved that they are more proficient cheaters. I suspect it's because they've been cheating far longer than the Republicans have, so they are just more experienced. But, okay, Obama won. You know, let's see. If you're an Obama voter, and I assume you're an Obama voter for because you're a Democrat, then, and you're all happy about your victory, you didn't win. Because Obama's not doing any of the liberal things that you want. He's terrible on civil liberties. He's pro-indefinite detention, pro-drone strikes. He's expanded the wars. He's pro-transfers of wealth from the poor and the middle class up to the uber-wealthy. He's for the Federal Reserve. So, you know, if you're a liberal, I don't know what you're cheering. Just the only thing you're cheering is that he's not Romney. But you got no victory. There's no victory for liberals. You could have voted Jill Stein. You didn't. You voted for Obama, and he won, and you're cheering like you got a victory. You got no victory. None of your liberal ideas are put up there other than nationalized health care, but let me break it to you. That's not Obama's. I asked Maury Povich, and he said that in the case of Obamacare, Mitt Romney is the father. So, you know, no dice on that one. So, you know, what did you win? And then for your Romney voters, who are so sad that your guy didn't win, well, if you're voting for Romney because of the things that he stands for and the things he's going to do, then you should be cheering because Obama's going to do all those things. And based on the campaign and that outcome, likely Obama's going to do all those things better than Romney would have. So, you know, you should be happy.
Slight change of verb tense. Romney was going to do, because he won't be doing anything now except going home. Hopefully never to be heard from again. Thank you.
Unless Obama replaces Hillary Clinton with Mitt Romney.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for ruining what was supposed to be the most important election of our lifetime, which is going to be a battle between conservatism versus socialism. And thanks, Romney, for showing up and preventing that from happening. So a lot of the teeth gnashing and the rimming of beards, I think, is unwarranted, even though the media continues to play it up that way. But what I'd like to say is, you know, a lot of people, they went and they said that, I don't like Romney, but I'm going to vote for the lesser of two evils. Well, you weren't really voting for the lesser of two evils. You were voting for the lesser of two liberals. And if you nominate two liberals, a liberal's always going to win. And that's what happened. It was just their liberal that won. So this was a battle of liberalism versus liberalism, and guess what? Liberalism won. So, you know, I don't know why you would even be upset. I mean, who cares? You know, you're listening to the radio. After I left the convention, I was listening to the radio, and they're talking about Romney, and they're puffing him off, and this is the last chance to save the Republic, and all this other stuff. No, it's not. Last chance to save the Republic was at the convention. And we actually did it, and the leadership shut it down. They wanted this. Now they're all gnashing their teeth. I mean, I just heard Ann Coulter. You guys can go to realclearpolitics.com. They have this video clip. It's Ann Coulter being interviewed by Laura Ingraham. Ann Coulter sounds like she's been crying all night. Oh, we've lost the country. Hey, too many people are on welfare. That's why they vote for Obama. I know people who voted for Obama. They're not on welfare. They're on the other team. You know, they're just like, hey, my father was a Democrat, and I like Roosevelt, and I thought Bill Clinton did a good job because he balanced the budget, which is what Newt Gingrich did, which was the guy probably you should have run at the top of your ticket, and you should have incorporated Ron Paul, and you could have won this thing. But no, the East Coast liberals who are in the Republican Party, they don't want to have that fight because that's not their fight. They don't understand conservatism. They're not really our leaders. They just claim to be. They're our leaders, our quote leaders, and they disdain us. So, you know, here we are. And what does she say? What does she say? This is actually one of the best parts about this. Is this is what happens. This is like Stockholm syndrome, where you start to sympathize with your captor. Although in her case, she always was in the bag for Romney from the get-go, as far as I know, right? So she says that Romney ran on his own force of will. Right? A magnificent campaign. I think he was the perfect candidate. Okay, so I'm just going to say, look, if she says nothing else after this sentence, Ann Coulter, write her off as a conservative, okay? Because if she thinks Mitt Romney was the perfect candidate and he ran a magnificent campaign, it is very clear that basically she just has a crush on the man or she's not a conservative, okay? So then Laura Ingraham says, are you kidding me? He ran a magnificent campaign. And she says, no, it was better than Ronald Reagan's, she says. So she's saying this was better than Ronald Reagan's campaign, except for that landslide victory instead of that landslide loss that Ronald Reagan got. I guess it was sort of like Ronald Reagan times negative one, I guess, would be where she's going with this. There were no Romney didn't. They had to start gaffes out of thin air. Romney is the first Republican candidate I've seen who didn't get nervous when he talks. Anybody remember Gingrich being all nervous up there, wringing his hands, you know, sweating, peeing his pants, you know, Ron Paul freaking out up there? No, it was always Romney with those eyebrows halfway up his head, you know. Hi, have you called on me? And I have to say something, you know, vaguely conservative. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to speak conservative. So the guy was always nervous. This is the giveaway here. She continues, Ann Coulter, he's a beautiful speaker. The man can barely string two sentences together. So I think what she's saying is she finds him attractive and likes to listen to him speak, even though he doesn't speak very well, and he's certainly not coherent. He's articulate.
But she could have voted for Fabio.
Exactly. She'd vote for Fabio, right? He's articulate, and he has an articulate vice president, something Reagan certainly did not have. He was so good in the debates as I knew he would be. And, you know, it just goes on. I mean, how delusional do you have to be to believe that stuff?
Well,
none of that is true. It's all false. Romney is the candidate nobody wanted. Romney is the candidate that everyone was trying to prevent from getting into the nominee slot. And so I did a little research that I think I'll share with you guys, which is, remember when Romney was the most electable guy? That's all you heard was how wonderful and electable Mitt Romney was going to be, and he's the only one who can beat anyone, right? So here we go. Where's this start? This is September 29th of 2011. There's so many of these that I'm not going to go through them all, but this is as far back as I went. Romney, New York Times. Jeff Zeleny, September 29, 2011, New York Times, says that Tim Pawlenty, all right, remember that T-Paw guy?
Mm-hmm.
He says, quote, it is human nature to think the grass is always greener somewhere else, said Tim Pawlenty, the former governor of Minnesota. He endorsed Mitt Romney and predicted that other Republicans would too, saying, quote, he's the most capable, most knowledgeable, and most electable candidate. Thank you, Tim Pawlenty, for misinforming people. So then, this is also September 29th. This is Dana Milbank. This is in the Washington Post. And talking about Herman Cain, who was all the rage at the time. Analysts have been buzzing over Cain's pizzazz in Florida. The Post, Chris Chiliza and Aaron Blake asked if the results following the wins in other straw polls by Michelle Bachmann, so they had a straw poll and they were asking them about the results, following wins in other straw polls by Michelle Bachmann, Ron Paul, and Rick Santorum means, quote, the end of straw polls, right? Because, hey, all these conservatives keep winning the straw polls. So surely straw polls don't mean anything anymore because Romney's not winning them. And then they wrote in response, quote, only the most conservative portion of the Republican base shows up at these events, skewing the results to the most ideological candidate, not the most electable one. See, only the Republican base shows up to vote in Republican straw polls. So those are useless because they don't need the base of the party anymore. You need an electable candidate like Mitt Romney who turns off the base. By the way, to get elected, you need a core of support. You know, I don't know, this a new thing. Apparently you don't need a core of support anymore. You can just dance on thin air. This is Associated Press, October 5th, who says that yet Romney has long struggled to win GOP voters' enthusiasm. Quote, nobody wants to put a candidate forward just because they happen to be the most electable, said veteran campaign consultant Terry Nelson. Voters want someone, quote, who has the kind of vision and solutions they think might work, he said. And Romney's team is trying to put forward that vision. So what he's saying is nobody wants to put forward a candidate like Mitt Romney just because he happens to be the most electable. They're also trying to put together a vision. See what I'm saying? They decided he was electable before he knew what he was running on. It doesn't work that way. So I got another one of these, and then I got something that's kind of I found interesting. So this is WashingtonPost.com. This is October 6, 2011. This is Jennifer Rubin, and she says, Romney is a better candidate and more deserving of front-runner status than he was at the beginning of the summer. He's reestablished himself as the most electable competitor to Obama. His campaign is as error-free as any I have seen in recent years. And we all remember how error-free Mitt Romney was. However, he has yet to close the deal or win a single delegate. Well, he didn't get enough delegates. Unfortunately for her own reputation, unlike Ann Coulter, she didn't say that his campaign was better than Ronald Reagan's, because clearly, judging it by the results and the practicality of the matter, it wasn't. So then,
maybe his reelection campaign. Oh, he won't get one of those. Oh well.
So then, I found an article. This one comes from it's an opinion piece. It comes from October 29th of 2011. Okay, so this person says the following words: Romney, supposedly the Republican most electable next November, is a recidivist reviser of his principles who is not only becoming less electable, he might damage GOP chances of capturing the Senate. Republican successes down the ticket will depend on the energies of the Tea Party and other conservatives who will be deflated by a nominee whose blurry profile in caution communicates only calculated trimming. Republicans may have found their Michael Dukakis, a technocratic Massachusetts governor. And you know who wrote that? I was surprised.
Who wrote that?
Will.
Wow, excellent. That's definitely a
shocker. I've been turning off to George Will. I came across this today completely at random, and you know, Now I got to give George Will a second look.
Yeah, maybe he's gotten his head out of Romney's armpit.
Maybe his check bounced. He was like, hey, Ronnie, you sent me that check, it bounced. So, there you go. This is what happens when my checks bounce.
Yeah. Well, Tex, I remember all this, you know, he's electable crap. And I remember at the same time, that's when Newt was kicking his butt. And they were like, yeah, but Newt's unelectable. He's got baggage. Baggage? Baggage? You stole the nomination for the guy with the most possible baggage. And yesterday's numbers proved it. I mean, he ran by agreeing with his opponent. The things that he didn't agree with his opponent with were newly found positions as recently as August, which nobody believed, and people stayed home. People stayed home. And I know that the narrative, Tex, is that Gary Johnson's 1.4 million votes and Virgil Goode's 100,000-plus votes and, you know, that these are, you know, and Tex and Rex and Robert Jett are promoting alternate parties is what cost Romney the election. But if you look at the numbers, Romney lost because turnout for Republicans was low, lower than 08. Oh, wait,
probably
didn't we tell you during the primaries that he only won when he suppressed turnout? And if you suppress turnout to win in primaries, you cannot win the general by suppressing turnout. And lo and behold, conservative and Republican voters stayed home.
Yeah. They were like, no, no. I mean, I had conversations with people about this. You know, people in Washington, they're like, you know, yeah, well, people don't like Romney, but, you know, once it comes around to the fall, they're going to come around and they'll start liking him because they'll be so afraid of Obama. Guess that didn't work. Yeah, we'll just run this piece of crap candidate, but they're just going to vote for him anyway because they're a bunch of stupid sheep, and they'll just do whatever we say.
Mm-hmm.
How arrogant, how clueless is that attitude? We'll all this. Yeah, we'll create such a bogeyman out of Barack Obama that people will fear for their very life if they don't vote for someone who has exactly the same policy. Doesn't work.
Yeah.
It does not work. To win an election, you have to have contrasting ideas, a battle of ideas, two different visions. Because, look, let me tell you something about how damaged this brand was, okay? And you guys all know this is true because we all lived through it. And now, you know, we're climbing out of the rubble, or some of you are climbing out of the rubble. The others of us have already dusted ourselves off months ago. And, you know, we're just waiting for you guys to come to your senses. But if people say of your candidate, well, I don't really like Romney. He wasn't my first choice. And he wasn't really my second choice either. But we got to defeat Obama. Ask yourself this, honestly, look at yourself in the mirror, think about this. How many people are going to give up their political identity, which they have fought for their whole life with friends and family, for someone that you say, I don't really like him, but you should come vote for my guy because he's better than your guy? Well, that's a bullshit argument right there. You already lost the election. It's over. It's done. No one's going to come over for that. And then, so that should be your first warning sign. And then for the political party leadership, of course, they don't talk to the American people. They don't know. They just focus group everything, and they talk to themselves, and so they assume that they're all doing great. Then you have the base of the party, which has said consistently throughout the election that they do not want this candidate. They band together at a grassroots level, and they go en masse to the state Republican Party conventions, and they pick delegates, right? They pick delegates to go to the national convention who don't like Romney. And guess what? Romney people could have gone to this convention, but the problem is, and you didn't figure out, there aren't Romney people. There is no base of support for Romney in the Republican Party, and that's why you didn't have pro-Romney delegates. So we go to Tampa, we have a convention, and you're so terrified of what's going to happen that you call off the first day of the convention because you've got to go sit in the back room and figure out how you're going to prevent this incredible disaster from Mitt Romney.
No, Tex, there was a hurricane. It was done for the delegates' safety.
Yeah, exactly. And we sat outside during that hurricane in the sunshine, watched the sun go down, and the glass-like waves, you know, come in on that Monday. There was nothing going on Monday.
Exactly.
If anything, Tuesday had rougher weather than Monday did, and it wasn't even that rough. I mean, hurricanes are a lot more intense in Austin, Texas, by which time they're, you know, 250 miles inland than that was in Tampa, and we were right on the beach.
Yep.
So they sit down, they have a meeting, they're like, hey, what's going on? The Republican Party delegates are here, like all these states, they pick their delegates, and they don't like Mitt Romney. we got to make sure that this doesn't turn into a big disaster for Mitt Romney here at the convention. Okay, well, they did that.
Mm-hmm.
But it turned out for a big disaster for the Republican Party and for Mitt Romney on Election Day. See, you
mm-hmm.
should have taken this as a sign that all was not well and that your lying on television wasn't actually working and that no one was being fooled and you were going to get left at the altar. And after that convention, it became very clear in September that Mitt Romney had no chance of winning at all. He was behind by 10 points in all these swing states, and it was just a complete disaster. And because it was such a blowout, it actually was embarrassing for the Republican Party leadership. And so I think they banded together with their friends, like, hey, just throw Mitt a bone and just tell him that he won this first debate so people think that, you know, he maybe has a chance. You know, just give us a little false hope. Have pity on us. We're terrible. We're the Republican Party leadership. I mean, and you say, oh, it's too conspiratorial. They don't really like each other that much. You know, well, clearly you haven't been to Washington. And second, you had Van Jones, for God's sake, the communist.
And Bill Maher.
Bill Maher. In ordinary circumstances, these guys have no justification whatsoever to say anything positive about Mitt Romney, period. Their whole job is to crap on Republicans. But even they either felt or were compelled to say something positive about Romney after that first debate. And then you guys went for it like, you know, piranha after a steak or something, thrown into the water. Just like, oh, yeah, we're going to win. No, you're not. Sorry.
And notice the numbers kept on edging closer and closer, but the electoral numbers, I mean, they barely shifted. They barely shifted.
Real Clear Politics had Romney at 191. They had him at 201 at one point after that debate, I think, and then back down at 191, he ended up getting 206. Obama in Real Clear Politics, he went all the way from 265 electoral votes, which really I think was the accurate count when it was 265 to 191, that was closer. And then, because you still had all the swing states, then Romney goes up to 201, then he drops down to 191, and then he ends the day with 206, and Obama has 303.
Right. Yeah.
But you got played.
It was theater, all right? It was theater. And, I mean, look, we can talk about this a little blue in the face, Rex, text. They shoved Romney because, you know, it's his turnism. We also want to be, you know, non-controversial, and we want to push through statist policies over a conservative electorate. But the fact is that he was never electable. He never had a chance. The mechanisms that are put in place by our founding fathers and by, you know, the Republican Party signaled all along, don't go with this guy. And, I mean, it's not like they didn't have choices where they're like, well, I guess we'll have to settle for Romney this year. You had Gingrich. You would have won last night with Gingrich. Right now you'd be looking at a weak Obama and you'd be looking at President Gingrich coming in January. You had Ron Paul. Ron Paul would have obliterated Obama, and I guarantee you, you would have had 10 to 15% of Democrats coming over to the Republican side. Okay? You had Ron Paul. You even had Rick Perry and Rick Santorum. I think they could have done a better job, much as I don't like either one of them. But they could have done a better job. So, I mean, Romney wasn't even in the top five.
He was always the worst one. He was just the richest. That's what you don't understand. He had the biggest war chest, and he spent 4 years buying out the party behind the scenes. Nikki Haley, the South Carolina Tea Party lady, sold out for $5,000.
Mm-hmm. Pam Bondi sold out. Bob McDonald sold out. I mean, they all sold out. They felt like little soldiers, you know, for the party line, and they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. I mean, think about it this way, right? Obama is worse than Jimmy Carter, who was so easy to beat that it shouldn't have taken much to beat Obama. And yet you ran two guys who couldn't even carry their own states. No ticket has failed to carry both home states of the Veep and POTUS nominee in 40 years. I mean, it couldn't have been worse. You picked the worst. You picked the worst. But,
yeah.
I mean, Tex, here we are,
well,
right? You know, Obama won.
Yeah. So,
big
well,
surprise.
Look, you know, let's not dwell on it too much. I have not come here to praise Romney. but to bury him. And so, you know, we may be coming back to his burial to, I don't know, pee on the mound from time to time tonight. But the important thing is to focus on where do we go from here? Because storm
right.
clouds are gathering, my friends. New storm cloud. It doesn't end with that. Because the political obituary for you and I and the Tea Party and the Liberty Movement was written early. And the narrative, as we have discussed, is that conservatives can't win, and that Mitt Romney was driven, if he lost, it's because he was driven to be too conservative during the primary, which is a lie, because I've never heard Romney say anything that sounded even vaguely conservative or coherent. So that's not true. But now that he's, if he won, it was going to prove that they didn't need conservatives. So where are we today now that Romney has lost? Okay, so this comes from Bloomberg.
Ooh,
and,
Bloomberg. Didn't he endorse Obama?
Yeah, well, this is Bloomberg News, so not Bloomberg the man, okay?
Yeah.
So this is Republicans stunned by loss begin debate over future. Okay, so what is the state of our debate and how is it being framed? Because as we've seen, so many Republicans will just fall in and listen to whatever the TV people say. So what are the TV people saying about what's going on? So here we have Republican Rhino Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina.
Oh, that one. He's
one
of my favorite. I really like that one. He has such nice shoes.
You're going to love what he has to say. So he says, quote, "If I hear anybody say it was because Romney wasn't conservative enough, I'm going to go nuts. We're not losing 95% of African Americans and 2/3 of Hispanic voters and under 30 because we're not being hard ass enough." Okay, so that's an enlightening statement, because apparently he equates being conservative and standing up for the Constitution and limited government and reining in its interference in our lives and restoring our constitutional freedoms as being a hard ass.
Wow.
So I think the guy doesn't understand what conservatism is, which is why he's
Has
not
he
a conservative.
Ever?
Exactly. Yes, exactly. He's not. I don't know why South Carolina elects him. I assume it's some corrupt political deal they have going on over there. But they keep this rhino jackass around. Then he says that we're losing voters under 30. Well, voters under 30 overwhelmingly supported another Republican candidate, you moron. His name was Ron Paul. So.
We're losing
you,
voters under 30. They came in droves to your convention, and you shit on them, and now you're saying you're losing them? You drove them away.
Why? Romney wasn't conservative enough. I'm not going to hear that crap. He was conservative enough. Why are we losing voters under 30? Why? I don't understand. Son of a bitch. That bastard. He's painful. And people are reading this like, oh, my God, yeah, we are losing voters under 30. You had Ron Paul. He's a Republican. You could have had voters under 30. Make him the vice president, for God's sake. I mean, Dan Quayle did the job. How the hell hard can it be?
Yeah.
You know, yeah,
but Joe Biden's
job
doing
in the
it now.
World.
They gave Joe Biden a second shot at it.
Do you wear clothes in public? Are you semi-intelligent when you speak? You could be the vice president, you know?
I don't even think you have to be semi-intelligent. Look at Joe Biden. Look at Joe Biden.
Yeah, exactly. You don't even have to know how to spell potato or whether or not the atmosphere on Mars is breathable or not. You know, you could be Joe Biden and you could still do this job. I mean, Joe Biden, he's doing great, right? All his gaffes and his embarrassing things didn't hurt Obama. I mean, you're probably kind of annoying, but like, I don't worry. He's the vice president, you know?
Exactly. Tex, I've been hearing this demographic shift narrative all friggin' day. I got a question, though. If the Republican Party is allegedly the conservative party, what conservative principles appeal only to someone based on their sex, ethnicity, national origin, tribal affiliation? I mean, aren't conservative principles universal?
Exactly. Look, that is the core of the problem. The Republican leadership, they have you know, for those who read The Lord of the Rings, they've stared too long into the Palantir, and they've been in Mordor far too long because they bought its BS, hook, line, and sinker, which is that they have to, you know, adopt gender identity politics in order to win. They have to see people in terms of skin color and groups, that Hispanic Americans and white Americans and black Americans and Asian Americans, that they all see the world completely different based on their skin color. I mean, what kind of 19th century horse shit is that? What, they Hispanics don't have kids? They don't want them to do well? They don't want the economy to be okay? You know, women, their one main and only issue is contraception. There's nothing else that happens in a woman's life that's more important to her than contraception. She has kids. She wants them to grow up and prosper and be successful. But, oh, no, she actually doesn't. She would want them to grow up to be in some kind of communist society where the government tells them what to do and, you know, the schools indoctrinate them and run their health care, cradle to grave, all that kind of stuff, as long as she has access to the pill, right? I mean, that's what it's about? And they think this is a winning strategy? Hispanics don't own businesses. Okay,
yeah.
I'm down here in Texas. Hispanics own a ton of businesses, and a lot of people who immigrate here either legally or illegally, one of the first things they do is they start going to work, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't have a lot of expenses. So they save up a lot of money, and then they go start a business. And they become business owners, and many of them become successful restaurateurs or successful people working in the construction industry, and some of them go into real estate and, you know, a lot of other, you know, very profitable things, right? They don't care about taxation on business. They don't care about, you know, the state
the
public school system, that
right.
The teachers' unions are completely killing education. All they think is, I'm Hispanic, and therefore I vote Democrat because the Democrats are going to get me on welfare.
Well, Texas,
and I'll vote
exactly
for the Republicans because the Republicans will let more illegal immigrants in here to come compete with me in my construction business or in my restaurant business, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah. Tex, look, this is the same crap that, you know, the Democrats managed to pull off. If you, you know, you remember back in the days of Tammany Hall and you had all these Irish and Italian Catholics coming into a predominantly Protestant, you know, Northeast area. And the Republicans kind of crapped on them, and, you know, Boss Tweed basically said, let's embrace these morons and make them Democrats. And so it worked out, and the Democratic Party grew based on that. And Catholics overwhelmingly were voting Democrat because the Republicans just treated them like crap. Learn a lesson. You did it to the Catholics back then. You're doing it to the Ron Paul Revolution now. And it wasn't until, I mean, and look, it culminated. I mean, in a matter of a generation or two, you had this immigrant population that barely was able to integrate initially. They had a president win in the Democratic Party in the early 60s. And then the Democrats took a hard left turn, moving away strongly from what principles Catholics at the time voted for. And so some of them actually grew a brain and moved over to the conservative party of Reagan. It just amazes me that there are these legacies. And so you've got, you know, blacks who vote Democratic and Hispanics who vote Democratic. So the Republicans, looking at this, hiring people like Mitt Romney, accountants and bean counters, who don't look at you as a person. I mean, the reason Reagan was so good, the reason Gingrich was able to connect, is because they articulated conservative principles in simple terms that related to actual human beings. Now you've got everything focus tested and statistic and focus groups and targeted demographics. So they're seeing that these groups are voting Democrat. You've got 95% of blacks, most Hispanics, women are leaning Democrats. So they start looking at people as either groups or statistical anomalies, and then they wonder why the Democrats are appealing to them. Well, that's because the Democrats always play division, identity, racial politics. So the Republican solution is to do the same thing. How about you just simply appeal to them as people based on the principles of a limited government, a strong national defense, lower or hopefully no taxes, free markets, right? Those are the principles that we stand for. Those are the principles that sell because those are the things that work, and that's what people want, whether they happen to be a black left-handed cross-dressing lesbian or a country club, you know, 65-year-old white guy. That's what they want. So why don't you appeal to them on those principles as opposed to on their identity? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, Rex, let me – exactly. And let me go on with the narrative that's being concocted. Okay, so then they talk with strategist Ron Bonjean, who said that the party's wing that opposes abortion rights, same-sex marriage, is poised to portray Romney's loss as a repudiation of nominating more moderate candidates. They will likely call him a flawed candidate. There's going to be an element of Republicans who don't think they went conservative enough. Okay, so see, they're already blaming conservatives for the loss. And then Charles Krauthammer, a conservative political columnist, dismissed Romney as a transitional figure on Fox News. Quote, he's a Northeastern liberal, and that's not where we're going, Krauthammer said. Quote, that's not where the future of the Republican Party is. Okay, well, I would agree with that. That sounds positive. Here's Krauthammer on December 1st of 2011. Comparing and contrasting Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney at the time that Gingrich and Romney were locked in the duel for the top, right? Who talks about Gingrich, deviating here and there, and then but saying that he has authored a historic conservative triumph, the 1994 Republican takeover of the House after 40 years of Democrat control, which means that Gingrich's apostasies are seen as deviations from his conservative core, while Romney's flip-flops are seen as deviations from nothing. Romney has no signature achievement, legislation, or manifesto that identifies him as a core conservative. So what is he? A center-right, classic Northeastern Republican who, over time, has adopted specific, thoroughly conservative platform. His entitlement reform, for example, is more courageous than that of any other candidate. Nevertheless, the party base, that would be us, ostentatiously pursuing serial suitors of the month, consider him ideologically unreliable, hence the current order for Gingrich. So he talks about Romney and being a Northeasterner and all this kind of stuff, and then, this entire article is crapping on Gingrich. She does not even mention Romney care and how unsuitable that makes him to take on Barack Obama. So then he says two ideologically problematic finalists. One is a man of center-right temperament who has of late adopted a conservative agenda. And then he said the second more obvious vulnerability for Gingrich is his electability. Oh, really? Guess that wasn't a problem for Mitt. And then this one comes from Charles, August 16th of this year, who concludes, he's talking about Paul Ryan, and he says, mild and moderate Mitt Romney will have shaped the conservative future for years to come, if you want. Anyway, so we go on to this guy, Tom Davis, a former Virginia congressman who once led the House Republicans' national campaign effort, said, Romney was the strongest candidate we had in the field of presidential contenders. I disagree. He says, instead of them curling up in a ball and asking, where do we lose conservative whites, we need to add people to the coalition. There's just not enough old white guys around. Yeah, all those old white guys supporting Ron Paul and, all those old white guys supporting, Herman Cain. Where did this party go? You're the people who nominated the white rich guy. You're the people, and now you're blaming the base as like, they just want old white guys. You're the one. You are accusing us of exactly what you just did.
Yep.
It's
just like that,
it's maddening.
That's an Alinsky tactic. They are employing the tactics of the left against us now. Who are you people? Who are you people running this allegedly conservative party? Who are you people? Because you're using the tactics of Alinsky against people that are not playing identity politics but standing on principle, and you're playing your bullshit statistical games of focus groups and identity politics, and you're failing at it. Get some conservatives.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Rex. And now, guess what? They're teeing up 2016 already. So everybody get excited about 2016, It's time for the Republican Party leadership's version of Move On, right? That's what Move On did after they lost to Bush in 2004, right? So they're going to move on. And so they conclude by saying, another Floridian, former Governor Jeb Bush, is also likely to see his name in the mix, especially if his party returns to a more centrist approach.
When were we not centrist? We've been, I guess they mean moving back from the left?
Exactly. Well, I mean, what are we going to – how can we be more centrist? I mean, well, Romney was one of them, so you're right. Exactly. You got to come back towards the right now. So maybe this is an ironic statement, and they're trying to indicate that they're behind enemy lines over here at Bloomberg News typing this, and, you know, but I sincerely doubt it. And then the other
Well, I got to ask you a question, though. If you are moving right, which puts you back towards the center because you've gone so far left, Jeb Bush? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Jeb Bush?
I mean, and you know what they're going to want? To appeal to Hispanic voters. Apparently Hispanics only vote based on whether or not someone else is Hispanic because they have no other interest or, you know.
Oh, and his wife is Hispanic. So that'll be a win.
Yeah. Well,
they'll see a Hispanic and they'll vote
Marco
Hispanic.
Rubio. So let me tell you something. For the next 4 years, you got to watch like a hawk whatever the hell Marco Rubio's doing because he's going to be their new golden boy.
Yeah. Well, one thing to keep in mind.
They're going to be ramming him down your throat.
Marco Rubio is ineligible for vice president and president positions because at the time that Marco Rubio was born, both of his parents were not American citizens. They were legal residents, and Marco Rubio was born here, and he is a native-born American citizen. But his parents were not citizens at the time of his birth. Therefore, according to the law at the time that Article 2 was drafted, he's not a natural-born citizen, so he's ineligible. And do they really think that people of Hispanic descent and South American Indians and Latinos or whatever else they're called, they're simply going to vote for somebody because they're of the same ethnicity? Without any concern for principles or values? Are you kidding me? I mean,
well, but see, we're in a post-constitutional America now, so there are no rules. So natural-born citizen, what does that even mean? I don't know. Let's not read that thing, and let's just do whatever the heck we want. But, you know, Rex, I think we should not focus too much on the U.S. election. Because, actually, tomorrow there's another very important election being held. On Wednesday, which is today, earlier today, actually Tuesday evening our time, because this happened on the other side of the world, a preparatory meeting of the 18th National Congress of the Communist Party of China decided to appoint Xi Jinping as Secretary General for the Communist Party of China. And interestingly, Communist China being something that we do not want to become, because, for instance, dissidents and activists have been placed under house arrest or ordered to leave the capital of Beijing, and a string of edicts has even seen pencil sharpeners removed from stores, I guess lest somebody run at one of these sons of bitches with a pencil and stabs them in the neck or something, you know?
Is that because of the National Defense Authorization Act that Obama signed? Oh, wait, no, the Chinese communists already had that power.
Yeah, exactly. This is a pre-existing one. Theirs is not of 2011. Theirs is of 1942. Yeah, exactly. So then they're going to have a meeting of 2,268 delegates. They will select a new central committee, although there are only a handful more candidates than seats. The latter body then formally appoints the new Politburo Standing Committee. In reality, the new leaders are chosen behind the scenes by the incumbents, party elders, and others with influence. Oh!
Wow.
Oh!
That's the Republican
like
Party model.
The Republican National Committee at Tampa.
Wait a
it's
minute.
So
are
different.
You trying to tell
it's
me?
So different
are
here.
You trying
but
to tell me that the Chinese communists are employing the rinse pubic model, or is it the other way around?
Oh, who knows?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up because yes, the RNC is definitely acting like a Gestapo or obviously the Chinese communist facade of elections as long as you're all partisans. But here's the interesting thing. You remember that Mitt Romney got tough on China, right? On day one, I will label China a currency manipulator.
Ooh,
Mr. Romney, how do you feel about Ben Bernanke? I like Ben Bernanke. Ben Bernanke's doing a good job at the Federal Reserve. Are you kidding me? This guy's like the chief currency manipulator. What a friggin' hypocrite. And guess what the Chinese are doing in response to this? First of all, they've made dozens of agreements with other countries that do not involve the Federal Reserve note, U.S. dollar, as the reserve currency. And now they're actually prepared, and they're actually already starting to cut these. They're building a gold-backed global currency for international trade. Oh, gee. It's almost as if they're trying to marginalize the United States. So what do we do in response to this? We reelect the weakest, most communist president in U.S. history. Is that a smart national security move?
And speaking of national security, so, you know, I've been talking to Romney, quote, supporters, basically Romney's surrenderists who are just confused and in the wilderness and don't know what the hell is going on and what to do, you know. Well, what was Romney going to do that was going to be so different, you know, because they're all in tears and they're crying into the bucket.
This can't be happening, man. This isn't happening.
Those guys?
Yeah, those guys. That's exactly what's going on, you know. Ann Coulter's calling in near tears at Romney's Reagan-esque campaign. He's the magnificent campaign and the best candidate she's ever seen in her life because he's so damn hot.
My eyes!
So what do you like about this guy? And so they said, well, you know, his foreign policy isn't going to be about, you know, going around and helping out the Islamic Brotherhood over in the Middle East. Oh, really, it's not? I don't know, Rex. Do we have any audio on Mitt Romney talking about him agreeing with Barack Obama?
Well, it would be very hard to find such a thing because there was so little of it. But luckily, a liberal comedian by the name of Jon Stewart managed to actually find the rare footage of Romney talking about his foreign policy.
I congratulate him on taking out Osama bin Laden. Drones are being used in drone strikes, and I support that entirely and feel the president was right. I want to underscore the same point the president made. I felt the same as the president did. I supported his action there. It's absolutely the right thing to do to have crippling sanctions.
Yeah, so
I haven't been engaged in a debate in a very, very long time, but I remember I don't think I ever scored any points in a debate by conceding to my opponent.
Exactly. You know, so if you are in the Democrat Party and you don't like Obama and you want to leave and you're like, well, maybe I'll vote for this Romney guy, and then you start watching and he's like, I agree with that. I think the president's doing a good job. I mean, I think he's all right. I mean, there's no reason. And then you go talk to other Republican voters. Like, well, what do you think about Romney? And like, well, look, I'll tell you, I don't really like Mitt Romney. He wasn't my first choice, my second choice, but I don't like Obama. You're like, yeah, I'm sticking with Obama.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, apparently, if you run a multi-billion-dollar campaign like Karl Rove and his stupid super PAC, you're all convinced that you've drawn this sheer contrast, and no one would ever go. It's not that complicated. These Baroque scenarios they devise.
Mm-hmm.
The world's not that freaking complex, okay? People make up their minds based on, you know, a variety of things that either make sense or don't make sense, but they're actually pretty simple, very practical things because a lot of people don't pay a lot of attention to politics, so they need shortcuts because they have daily lives, things they have to go through, hoops they got to jump through, mostly creations of government regulations and banks and things that they have to take care of, and they don't have time to pay attention to which oppressor they're selecting today, and so they make mental shortcuts. And if they go watch a debate and the one guy is agreeing with the other guy, you know what they don't think? Hey, light bulb in my head. He's a nice guy. I want to vote for a really nice guy. What they think is, oh, my guy's already okay because the other guy agrees with him, so I'm not going to listen to what this guy has to say. So he doesn't win. But you know what? For those on the left and on the right, no worries, because in foreign policy, there is vast agreements between the two parties as to what they're going to do. In fact, the hated Barack Obama foreign policy currently being implemented overseas in the Middle East is pretty much exactly the George Bush democratize the Middle East strategy that he came up with that you supported when an elephant was doing it, but now that a donkey is doing it, you don't support it. And perhaps we have some a little taste of that from our friend Jon Stewart of Comedy Central.
Tex, we actually do, and it's a kind of an interesting clip, a little bit longer than the other one. Here it is.
How closely did Mitt Romney align himself with what had, I guess up until last night, been the worst foreign policy ever? Listen to these guys duet on Syria.
I believe that Assad must go.
Assad has to go.
I don't want to have our military involved in Syria.
For us to get more entangled militarily in Syria is a serious step.
So the right course for us is working through our partners.
In consultation with our partners.
To identify responsible parties within Syria.
Mobilizing the moderate forces.
Organize them.
Helping the opposition organize.
We do need to make sure.
Making absolutely certain.
That they don't have arms.
Arms in
the wrong hands.
Folks who eventually could turn them against us.
To hurt us down the road.
Thank you.
Yeah. So this is the big point of disagreement between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama that made them vote for Mitt Romney, because he's going to be so much better and so much more effective in foreign policy than Barack Obama is. It's the same policy. For God's sakes, do you not realize this? Have you not? How old are you? Are you actually paying attention, or are you just letting people fill your head, pour poison into your ear, like the play within a play in Hamlet? They're not
Cheetos. American cheese.
It's the exact same thing. And then I already talked about, I pulled this stuff out, but I'm not going to bother you with it. We did a show after that debate, the Biden-Ryan debate, where they were talking about the differences on Afghanistan. And they go back and forth and back and forth, where Ryan says, I wouldn't have pulled the 20,000 troops out of some, you know, portion of Afghanistan because now we've turned that over to the Taliban. And Biden says, well, we replaced them with Afghanistani troops that we train, right? And then so Ryan's like, yes, but I wouldn't have done that. And also I wouldn't have announced a date of withdrawal. And so Biden says, well, do you not agree with the withdrawal date of 2014? You want to stay longer than that? No, I think 2014 is fine. I just don't think we should have announced the date. And again, I go back to two things. First, on announcing the date, there are several other countries that we enticed, strong-armed, or muscled into going to Afghanistan with us so we could have a coalition of nations so we weren't going it alone, right? So it's a fig leaf.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to leave? There's 49 other countries there. How are you going to leave and not tell anyone when you're leaving?
And
just one day all of a sudden you'll be gone?
Do you have to tell the Afghanis that you're leaving?
Yeah,
hey, guys,
exactly.
You're in charge of security now, starting tomorrow. Bye.
Did the failed Romney-Ryan ticket think that it was possible to sneak 100,000 American military troops out of a country and not be noticed? That you could just all of a sudden in a single day, just everyone goes away at the same time? People are
like
going to notice, hey, are you leaving the country?
Run for your lives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then on the thing about Ryan saying that, well, I wouldn't have pulled those troops out, and Biden saying, well, we replaced them with Afghanistani troops that we trained, Mitt Romney in his foreign policy speech at VMI said that he was going essentially to Afghanistanize the war, just as we Vietnamized the war when we pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So they agree on that even. So there's
could
no disagreement on foreign policy.
Could
have no disagreement on domestic or foreign policy.
Hey, Tex, could this neocon foreign policy not even be George Bush's idea or even Bill Clinton's? Could it just simply be the neocon establishment in Washington, D.C. that pretty much tells administrations and presidents what the foreign policy is going to be?
I wonder.
Hmm. It would be an interesting conjecture. I mean, if the foreign policy – what baffles me is the foreign policy doesn't change. The domestic policy doesn't change. Monetary policy doesn't change. Tax policy doesn't change. The only thing we ever tinker around with is, do we allow rates to go up 20% January 1st? Do we lower them 20% on this group and raise them 15% on that group? But we never talk about the nature of taxation.
With monetary policy, it's like, well, I'm going to appoint a different Fed Reserve chairman because Greenspan sucked. We're going to appoint Bernanke. And the Fed just does whatever it's going to do. On domestic policy, you know, one's going to do No Child Left Behind. The other one is going to do a prescription drug program. The other one's going to nationalize health care. But basically, it's all just more large government programs we can't afford. In foreign policy, it's pretty much whatever country happens to have resources that some of the corporations that are entrenched in D.C. want, we tend to go over there and go to war when we know that the best deterrent is just being the biggest badass on the block so that nobody will screw with you. I think that Reagan said, what was that? He paraphrased an ancient Roman statement, and I think he just said peace through strength, or as the Romans would say it, in peace, prepare for war. Is that the best foreign policy?
Exactly.
So, yeah, look, how did we get here? We reelected the Darth Obama as opposed to replacing him with Darth Mitt. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter. What matters is what you're going to do next. So I think we've pretty much beat this up for an hour, Tex. You got any final thoughts on how we got here so we can start talking about where we're going?
Yeah, well, I would just say, looking back at the last, you know, let's say 50 years, who's really changed things in Washington? You know, let's just go back to Nixon. Didn't change anything. Nixon was a Republican, but he's a complete liberal. And you know what? Nixon embodies everything that's wrong with the current Republican Party, right? The current Republican Party leadership, because that's the party they were. I mean, all this stuff that Nixon did, EPA and, you know, wage and price controls and all this kind of stuff, that's the Republican Party. These people, the Johnson Unus, they were around in that party, all right? So they don't have a problem with wage and price controls and government should do this, that, and the other and should be all over, you know, every aspect of your life and a business and regulating it, even down to what the price of goods should be. You know, that's the problem that we're facing. And then who comes and shakes things up? You have Ronald Reagan, and then George Bush is like, well, this Ronald Reagan stuff is a little
doo-doo economics.
Yeah.
Radical doo-doo economics.
And so then he goes back the other way, and then you get Ross Perot coming up like, hey, I use a bunch of crap. You know, and
Giant
people are like, yes, I like that guy. Like, I like what he says, but he's not a Republican. So I'm, you know, and even Democrats voted for him. I know a lot of Democrats who crossed over and voted for him. And if we as a country had picked him, for God's sakes, we would have been a hell of a lot better off. But then, because we didn't, and we ended up with Bill Clinton, the person who actually did come along and change things was Newt Gingrich.
Newt.
And so what happens? Newt Gingrich is demonized because he did, you know, the third rail of Washington politics is balancing the federal budget. And so Newt Gingrich got all the blame for balancing the budget because, hey, you shut down the government for 3 days. You can't do that. Oh, my God. Now people can't go to national parks. Remember they were showing people being turned away from Yellowstone National Park? They don't. They can't afford the trees today. Today we can't afford the grass and the water on this lake, nor we can afford the snow on that mountain. So you can't
There's
come
no
in.
Air. There's no air in the park today. We didn't pump it in.
Exactly. It's fucking it's absurd, right? But so he got all the blame. They're like, oh, you know, the Gingrich that stole Christmas or whatever, you know? And now Clinton, what's he doing? He goes to Barack Obama's convention. He's like, I'm the only president who sent you four balanced budgets.
I cut capital gains taxes, reformed welfare, and got a blowjob in the Oval Office. I'm great. I'm Bill Clinton.
Free ice cream for everyone. Vote for me. You know, I mean, and who did this? Our own party stabbed our guy in the back, you know? Ron Paul, people will say, well, it wasn't truly a balanced budget. Okay. Well, so get there to that place as a starting point and then talk about the accounting tricks and then let's fix the accounting tricks, right?
Hey, whether it was or wasn't balanced, it was the closest we've ever seen four straight years in our lifetimes, the last, since 1958, okay? That's a pretty big accomplishment, especially if you've been in D.C. and Texas, I know you have, so you know how much of a slog it is to get anything actually accomplished in this town.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even describe. Once you even start talking about doing something, the forces of evil align against you, you know, and just every single step just becomes a nightmare. But he was able to do it because he was Speaker of the House. And this gets back to, and I think we will now change topics to, where do we go from here? Because in 2010, we were like, we have had it with this Barack Obama BS and this big government crap. We already voted against this with Bill Clinton, who also did a stimulus, who also did Hillary Care or Romney Care, and also did gays in the military and all this other kind of stuff that these candidates explicitly said that, you know, they weren't going to do. We got duped again. And by God, we've had it. We're going out there. We're picketing and we're creating the Tea Party. We want cut spending, quit spending so much damn money, lower taxes, and get the hell out of our life. And so we won. Once again, just like our brokered convention, we won, and we had it in our hands, and we elected our candidates, and we gave the Republicans the House, and then they picked John Boehner.
Ooh.
And John Boehner is the guy who stabbed Newt in the back and got rid of him and got him out of Washington for balancing the budget. And so John Boehner came in with his newly empowered mandate from the Tea Party and with his power of the census to adjust districts, essentially went through and used his authority in order to manipulate districts to eliminate Tea Party districts. Go ask Alan West about this very thing. In order to make it difficult for Tea Party people to show up again because they want limited government and cutting the budget. And John Boehner's like, I already dealt with this with Newt Gingrich. I don't want these people coming back here again. And so, my friends, here's the task at hand. You all have congressmen throughout your state. You need to get in touch with them and let them know John Boehner cannot be the Speaker of the House anymore. He's done because he does not serve the interests of the Republican Party anymore. Or maybe he does serve the interest of the Republican Party leadership, but he certainly doesn't serve the interest of the base. He's not a conservative. Mm-hmm. He is a wolf in sheep's clothing. He wears your jersey, claims to be one of you when in fact he's not.
He sullies your name. He sullies your name.
Yes.
And Tex, it's now the top of the hour, and callers are starting to line up. So we'll start, since we're talking about John Boehner, and he hails from the once great manufacturing state of Ohio. We have on the line the host of Bar's Logic Political Talk from Ohio, I believe from John Boehner's district, Robert Jetter. Robert, you're live with Tex and Rex.
Yes, I am from the once great state of Ohio. I'm not from Boehner's district. And that's what my mother-in-law, who is a Democrat, calls Boehner. She calls him Boehner, which is funny because she's an 80-year-old woman. Her calling that's pretty funny. But Steve Chabot is the Republican, at least for my district, and I believe he actually won last night. Didn't vote for him, but I believe he won. Go ahead.
I was going to ask a question. Now, I heard through various channels that you actually, unbeknownst to many, are the kingmaker in Ohio. And you apparently, and being the kingmaker in Ohio makes you the most powerful person in American party politics because you swung the election away from the Republicans in Ohio and therefore cost Mitt Romney the nomination, because if he won Ohio, he would have won the presidency, I guess. But yet, you apparently wield this enormous power, and so I was wondering, as you wield this power, you know, how heavy is the crown that you wear as you walk around? And I certainly, I'm humbled that you would even, you know, honor us by calling into our show.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me. Yeah, it's kind of a heavy weight. I know I've got a lot of people who are not happy with me since I single-handedly, it seems, kept Mitt Romney from getting Ohio. At least that's what I've been hearing as well. It's a heavy burden to bear, but you know, I guess it's just something that I'll have to wear and have to deal with in the time to come. And while I'm wielding this power and have this power, I would suggest for the folks to go ahead and look at other parties, such as the Constitution Party, if they're looking towards conservatism, and actually perhaps listen to something that Herman Cain recently, I think maybe even as recent as today, has been touting for a third party to emerge, or the conservatives from the Republican Party to secede and go to a conservative party, which, of course, we know the most conservative party of the third ones that were on ballots this past, you know, yesterday election was the Constitution Party. So
yeah.
There you go. I think the Constitution Party ought to replace the Republican Party in the state of Ohio.
Well, the interesting thing, Robert, is that the Constitution Party wouldn't actually be a third party because we first have to have a second party in order to have a third party, and right now we've only
Indeed.
Got one party. But I got a question for you. How many votes in the Electoral College does Ohio have?
16.
Okay, hold on a second. So
16
Barack Obama. Okay, Barack Obama got, text, if I'm not correct, something like 303, and Mitt Romney got 206. So that's a spread of what, 97 electors?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 97 minus 16, carry the one. Yeah, I don't think that even if Mitt Romney got Ohio, he would have been able to pull it off. Am I doing my math right?
Well, what you're forgetting is that because Roberts, who's dialed in, is in Ohio, that makes it 16 delegates count five times. So that's why it cost them.
It's the Jeter magnifier effect.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
The Jeter multiplier. So you got to add that. But yeah,
completely logical, gentlemen. It's completely
logical. It didn't cost anyone anything. It's a case of sour grapes, right? They accused us of having sour grapes because our guy didn't get through, and we. It's not sour grapes, it's reality. This guy cannot win. And also
right.
This guy is completely ideologically opposed to what you claim to believe for. Get out of the vehicle. It is going off a cliff. You know, don't go
question.
Down with that ship.
Yeah.
But yet
it interesting.
Went, you yelled at us as you went down the thing, and now you're at the bottom, and now you're angry at us that we did it to you. We warned you. We repeatedly
exactly.
warned you.
Hey, who's the bigger influence? The 2 million of us who voted for alternate parties or wrote in another candidate like Ron Paul, or the 90 million of us who just didn't vote? I mean, let's think about who really cost Romney this election. I'm fairly confident it was one Willard Mitt Romney. Romney
as I,
cost Romney the election.
Mm-hmm.
As I said at the beginning of this. Don't blame me when Romney loses. Romney is perfectly capable as an adult of losing this election all on his own. You all know he's going to lose the election because you don't really support him. So you're running around faking and pretending that you do support him because you don't know what else to do. And you think that if you feign enough support for him, that you will convince enough other dupes from the other party to switch their political identity, for which they will, you know, have to suffer all sorts of social repercussions from friends and family, to come vote for the very same candidate that you yourself don't like.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
that's a winning
and
strategy.
And you believe that. You,
yeah.
You believe that that was possible. Look, I'm not here to berate you for what you did. Everyone did what they thought that they had to do to make things better. Okay, but
yep.
The fact of the matter is, it fell apart, you know, whether some people saw it or not. And let me tell you, even if I had voted for Mitt Romney, you know, it's not going to have changed anything because my state went Mitt Romney. So, you know, I was comforted by the knowledge that whatever I did, the Republicans would still, and I am a Republican, the Republicans would still win my state. But I wanted to send a signal to the Republican Party that it's on the right track because I think what we need to do now is go have a meeting, a heart-to-heart with the Republican Party and tell them, what did you do to us? Why are you doing this? Are you actually our leadership or are you lying to me? Are you a wolf in sheep's clothing? Are you on my side or are you against me? And by the way, this narrative that that
I think they
the conservatives – that people who believe in the Constitution and limited government are just old white men doesn't cut the mustard.
Well, Tex,
and
I got a
question. You're not going to be ramming that down our throat, and anybody in this party who holds an elective office who holds to that narrative has got to go immediately because by that time you will know the people who are on the other side.
Right. Tex, I got a question because, you know, I think – you know, as a true conservative, meaning that I seek to conserve the principles codified by a liberal classical liberal 19th century liberal 18th century liberal document, the U.S. Constitution. Okay, that's what I believe conservatism is, and I think that that's what most conservative Republican voters believe in as well. So that being the case, since they're already giving us this narrative that it is conservatives' fault that we lost, if the leadership is going to continue with this narrative, are conservative voters who possibly held their nose, voted for the rhino in the hopes of dislodging the Marxist, and it failed, as it always has, failed with McCain, failed with Dole, failed with Bush, are they going to come join us to fight for the cause of conservatism, whether it be in the Republican Party, outside the Republican Party, in and outside the Republican Party? Who knows? Wherever conservatism finds a voice, I'm happy to be there. I could care less what party label or logo it is. I'm a conservative. Or are they going to continue to defend the vote that they felt they had to make yesterday? Because if they're going to continue to defend the vote that they felt they had to make yesterday, then I don't know how we're going to recover. But if you conservatives are going to say, okay, you know, I felt so strongly that Obama had to go, and even though Mitt Romney wasn't my first, fourth, fifth choice, I voted for him and, you know, tried to get others to vote for him, and clearly it failed, but now I'm ready to fight for conservatism. Will we be able to work together?
They've now had a bitter experience, and maybe they've had them before or they haven't, but the bitter experience is over. That's the good thing. It's done. So, you know, they may be going through all the stages of denial and everything. I have a little shortcut, which is called I just get to acceptance, right? Because
yeah.
I don't need to go through the whole passion play. We're just like, okay, that happened, and I didn't like that, but now what do I do, okay? So some people may be going through all the emotions, and Ann Coulter apparently is crying and dialing into radio shows. You know, so she's in a slough of despond over this thing because her boyfriend didn't win. You know.
I thought her boyfriend was Chris Christie. When did she decide to go over the slim guy?
Well, she's cheating on him.
Well, I'm not going to say that. Okay. But anyway, I have an off-color joke. I'll shut up. Anyway. You know, the thing is, look, where do we go from here, okay? Because you didn't like this ride. If you voted for Mitt Romney, you do not like where you are today, and you're facing a world with four more years of Obama, you know? Okay, so look at what happened in 2004 to the Democrats. They were in the same position. I met many, you know, Democrats who were coming out of that experience. They were bewildered, confused, and frightened by the world, and you know, George Bush was the most evil thing. Remember, they created him with Hitler and all that kind of stuff. They survived it. And they came back and they won in 2008. Okay, so how do we come back and win in 2016, but not with a Republican, but with a real conservative? It could be a Republican who happens to be a conservative, but the important thing is it has to be a conservative, somebody who believes in the principles of the Constitution, someone who believes in returning government back to the strictures of the Constitution, limiting the size of government, limiting the growth of government, and reducing taxes and returning us to some sort of sound money. How do we do that? I don't know. But I think the first step is we got to deal with the battlefield as it exists right now. You have a Democrat president, you have a Democrat Senate, and you have a Republican House being run by a Democrat named John Boehner. And so what you need to do is get rid of that Democrat and replace him with an actual conservative who can start doing the kinds of changes that we need to see in the House of Representatives that, for instance, Newt Gingrich took on when he became Speaker of the House, and start fighting the battles. And someone who's willing to stand up for what he's doing, who can withstand the slings and arrows, and who can articulate what we need to do in order to carry us to victory in 2014.
Robert, did you want to follow up on that?
Well, you know, as I said earlier, you know, and this was on, I can't remember which show, but it's going to have to start tomorrow, today, getting, you know, signatures and things of that nature for, you know, other, you know, like constitutional parties or whatever, libertarian parties, or if you're a liberal, the Green Party, for instance. So, you know, just because the election's over doesn't mean that the work is done. It's actually going to be, you know, it's going to be a lot more. And also, I sometimes wonder, and, you know, I've had a lot of guests from my family on whether a Romney victory would have actually made that work much harder, because people would have thought, well, okay, well, we got a Republican in there now. Now it's time. We can relax and we can, you know, take it easy because Obama's gone. So, you know, that, you know, remains to be seen. But, you know.
Well, Robert, you know, as I looked at the election, right, so I'm listening to this thing as a non-participant. You know, just every time they said something positive about Romney, it made my blood boil. And when they said something positive about Obama, you know, I wanted to punch something, right? But after a while, you're just like, who cares? It's all fake. It's all a farce. It is as fake as
wrestling. Movie theater.
Well,
exactly.
And it's interesting to say, because I'll get it.
What comforted me was that if Romney won, I figured it was an economic victory because Wall Street would be happy, and therefore all this money that they're holding on the sidelines would rush back into the U.S. economy, and we would start doing better. Even though Romney would essentially be implementing Barack Obama's program, you know, Wall Street would be happy because he probably would be doing things that were in their interest, and therefore the economy would be marginally better. And so that would be
Wall Street was not happy today.
Yeah, that would be a good, acceptable outcome, okay? Then I thought, if Barack Obama wins, you have a political victory, because if Romney had won, they were going to jam down your throat this notion that, you know, conservatism loses, you don't need conservatives in order to win, there's a new Republican Party, which is the moderate party, and that would be the end of the conservative movement within the GOP, and I think literally it would be the end of the Republican Party, because there is no base of support for that. But now we're holding all the cards, we being the conservatives, which is why the first thing you're seeing off the press is this new propaganda stuff stating that there's not enough old white guys to support the Republican Party. Why did we lose the under 30 votes? Well, because they're in the Republican Party and you told them to fuck off at the convention.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why you're losing, because you liberal moderates in the Republican Party cannot possibly win. We keep telling you this.
Yeah. Hey, this is a great party-building exercise. When you have droves of motivated, excited young people participating in your process, crap all over them, tell them to get the fuck out of your party, and then bitch at them for not voting for your insipid candidate. That is a winning strategy
for
growing the party.
Rich, stodgy, rich white guy candidate, and then wonder, well, I guess stodgy, rich white guys, you know, that part of the base can't win. You know what I'm saying? Backhand these people.
And that's another part that was kind of, you know, a moment where it's like, what the hell are you thinking? Because they know what the environment is with, you know, after the, you know, economy crash and there's rank unemployment all over the place. And then you have what people would consider one of the one percenters running for president. You're not going to get. And then he had that debacle with the 47%. I mean, what the hell was the Republican Party thinking? Not only putting a moderate to liberal, as we said, if never won an election over 40 years in the general election, but also that there is a. Would you agree that there's an air in America right now of, you know, anti-rich, you know, wealthy folks, and even among that's coming not just from the poor anymore. It seems like there's almost a class envy from the, you know, and blaming the rich for, you know, the economic, because they got the bailouts and things of that nature. And then the Republicans pick someone who's pretty much a representative of the establishment or the folks that are actually making these people lose their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all look. This is not uncommon, and Tex will tell you, having been in Dumpster City here, it's not uncommon that you cause the problem, and then you denigrate the very group that actually doesn't like the fact that you caused the problem. So you put up the worst candidate, who's a liberal, who is an old white guy in the top 0.0001% and doesn't relate to anybody. And then you blame the actual base that he was designed not to relate to for his loss. See, that's the strategy, so that they can blame somebody else, meaning
Absolutely.
Us, true conservatives, while continuing their corporatist agenda with their insipid candidates. Now, do you think that John Boehner's really upset that Mitt Romney didn't win? I mean, John Boehner now gets to talk conservative and stand up to Obama and keep
passing. Now he's the head of the party, right?
Yeah, and then
he
passes corporatist bill after corporatist bill. He's very happy. So what everybody needs to do is you need
That's
to
That's why
contact.
You got to knock him out of that seat and get somebody who's actually going to do something.
Yeah, and that's going to require massive public pressure. You're going to have to contact your Republican representatives. You're going to have to contact the party, and you got to tell them that there are three people that have to go. Well, four. You got to get rid of John Boehner, Speaker of the House. You've got to get rid of John Sununu because he's the one who's going to be manipulating the rules for the next 2 years to ruin elections. You got to get rid of Prince Pubic because he was designed to undo what the great Michael Steele did. And you got to get rid of the Roadster. Just go up to all of them and you tell them,
get out.
You dick!
Very simple strategy. It's the Terminator Spicoli 1-2. You just tell them, I'll repeat that for you one more time. You just go up to these guys and you tell them,
get out.
You dick!
And then once they're gone, you might actually be able to make the Republican Party conservative once again. Now, I'm not incredibly optimistic about that possibility, but I won't rule it out, because to me, principle stands over party. I'm a conservative.
Well,
if you're listening to this show, you're probably a conservative too. Now, if I can be a conservative with the Republicans, whoop-de-doo, I'll be a conservative with the Republicans. If I can be a conservative with the Constitution Party, absolutely. Hey, if I can be a conservative with the Libertarians, I'll do that too, because the conservative principles are what matter. Right, Tex?
Exactly, Rex. And, you know, look, right now is fertile ground, because there are people who are disillusioned. They don't know what's going on. They think, we've just lost the country. Too many people are on welfare, because they were pumping this propaganda out, right? That Barack Obama is this, you know, socialist, communist, all this kind of stuff, all this terrible stuff, and the people who vote for him only vote for him because they're on welfare, and that they're takers. There's the makers and the takers, and if you vote Republican, you're a maker, and if you vote Democrat, you're a taker. It's not true, okay? Look, Barack Obama's a complete socialist. You know, I'll just tell you that right now. But so is Mitt Romney, okay? And you're bought into the narrative that everybody who voted for the Democrat Party is some kind of mooch. Well, in your daily life, you know a lot of Democrats. About one out of every two people turns out to be a Democrat, right? They're not all freaking takers, okay? It's just their team. And so what you need to do is stop falling in line for the party, voting for whoever the TV people tell you to vote for, and start voting for people who have the actual positions that you agree with. Because if you start doing that, you will start empowering candidates who believe what you believe. And I believe you will find that the vast majority of the country has wide areas of agreement with you. If you actually talk to Democrats, there are areas where we all agree. And none of us are happy with the two-party system and with the choices that we had this time. And you know what? We keep allowing ourselves to get trapped into this party identity and voting against our interests. They say, well, Republicans always vote against their own interests. The Republican middle class votes against their interests. No, they don't. They vote the way they think that their interests will work out the best. Same thing with Democrats. But the reality is, we're all voting against our interests because we're empowering two parties that basically agree that the state needs more authority over us to tell us exactly what to do. As we've said many times, the main political conflict of our age is not between the left and the right. It's between centralized power and decentralized power. The left and the right, it's a circle. They have met. They are reaching the apogee of, political concentration, and we are upset with it. But they're giving you left versus right, left versus right. Meanwhile, they are approaching, you know, a point of connection on that circle. And so what you have to do is start moving it backwards down on the y-axis in order to get back to decentralized government. That's really the main conflict.
Yep. And Tex, the way that I see it, some of us for some time, some of us very recently, some of us since what happened, what was done to Newt and Dr. Paul, some of us since Tampa, have kind of seen the event horizon. Some of us chose not to see the event horizon, and we decided that, well, you know, Obama is absolutely the worst ever. He has to go no matter what, and so we're going to vote Romney. Well, that's the past. We have already talked about how we got here, but what we have to realize is where is here? And this is where kind of the title of the show that we've been using comes into place, and it's Liberty Rising, the end of the duopoly. If America is not about liberty, and America is not about conservatism, really conservative, because America is a conservative country. We were founded on liberal principles at the time, and now we seek to conserve them 225 years later, or in some cases restore them, not just even conserve them. So if we truly want to live under the banner of liberty that the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence provide us, then we have to understand how we're being managed. First, keep in mind that six corporations own 95% of the media outlets and manage the message. For all of you faithful, fair and balanced Fox News watchers, there's nothing fair and balanced about them, and if you were supporting Newt Gingrich or Ron Paul, you would have seen it clearly. They were in the tank for Romney from the get-go. The others are in the tank for Obama, but in a sense, they're all just managing your perception of what's going on, and what they're doing is they're building up duopoly. Duopoly is a more insidious form of monopoly. Now, a monopoly cannot truly be had except at the nascent stages of an industry where maybe only one person, you know, has the market before other players get into it, without the power of the gun, which means the government. So in order to secure monopoly, you need government. The problem with monopoly is it's very evident that there's only one entity in control. And so people tend to get restless and will resist it, and there may be resistance, revolution, angst at minimum. So the concept of duopoly is to give you two choices that are presented as significantly different, but in fact yield the same result. And that's what you have here. You've got these two parties that they tell us have never been more polarized and have never gotten along less. And they get you riled up so that you're going after the liberals and the liberals are going after you. In the meantime, the two parties have never gotten along more, and the two parties have never pushed the same agenda more coherently together in tandem than ever. You've got to break that, because if your principles, and this applies to those who have liberal tendencies, whether it's on social values or even economics, although I'm not really worried about economic liberals because it's so easy to destroy their false ideas. But, you know, if you have these principles and you want to articulate them and express them, then you need a party that actually does that. Well, neither the Republicans nor the Democrats do that. They just give you this false sense of choice. Now, you can either reform the parties or go outside, or what I advocate, do both. Why do we only need two parties? Rex, why can't we have a dozen parties?
You know, there's something, and I watched this before I went to go work in Washington. And, you know, when I was working in Washington, new people would come work for the government, or they would come to Washington for the first time, and they would have questions about orienting themselves in D.C. and how D.C. worked. And I said, look, you know, I can tell you various things, experiences that I've had, you know, how to survive in this office and all this kind of stuff, and who to trust, or at least who I think you could trust. But you could do no better self-preparation for yourself than to go obtain, watch, rent, purchase a series of videos. It's a 1970s British comedy called Yes, Minister. And then later the minister, who was Minister Hacker, he eventually became the prime minister, and then they changed the name of the show to Yes, Prime Minister. And speaking of options, in one of those shows, this was a Yes, Prime Minister episode, he was talking about foreign policy, and he wanted to make some sort of choice about British foreign policy. If I recall correctly, it involved British nuclear submarines and involved something with Russia. And so there were two guys, the sort of head of the British civil service, his name was Sir Humphrey Appleby, and the other guy was named Bernard or Bernard. And Bernard was kind of the naive ingenue, and Sir Humphrey was the seasoned bureaucrat introducing the ingenue to how it worked, and thus Bernard is who you, the viewer, are, and Sir Humphrey is, you know, teaching you about the ways of politics. And so Bernard says to him about this foreign policy choice, what if he demands options? And so Sir Humphrey says, well, it's obvious, Bernard. The Foreign Office will happily present him with three options, two of which are, on close inspection, exactly the same, plus a third, which is totally unacceptable, like bombing Warsaw or invading France. And thus, that is what the monopoly is about, presenting you with two choices that are so similar that it doesn't matter exactly which one you choose, because at the end of the day, you're serving their interests.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't
have to. And Tex, I mean, if someone is listening or, you know, wondering what are these guys really talking about, and is this true, just go back and look at the last 30 years of politics and erase the sponsors, erase the parties, erase the names, and just look at the policies and tell me which ones you actually agree with. And I suspect you'll be rather surprised that, A, you disagree with most of them, and B, the ones that you disagree with will probably split, actually agree with, will probably split almost evenly on the side of both parties. For example, when the Patriot Act was first proposed, who was against it? Wasn't the Republicans, because who proposed it? It was their guy, George Bush. Homeland Defense. It wasn't the Republicans who were against it. It was the Democrats. Now, oddly enough, as soon as they elected Barack Obama the first time, suddenly the Patriot Act and Homeland Defense became great things, and then they doubled down on that with the 2011 NDAA with Sessions 1021 and 1023 and indefinite detention. Now, if you're truly against the Patriot Act and Homeland Defense, which as a conservative you would be because we believe in limited government, which implies that there are civil liberties, and if you're a liberal who is very high on civil liberties, would be in agreement. The only reason that you agreed with it was because it was your party that promoted it. And in some ways, it makes the liberals more hypocritical because they disdained this stuff when George Bush did it and then immediately turned around in 2008 and said, this stuff is great because Barack Obama's doing it.
Absolutely.
But the fact is,
and the Republicans
those things are against,
showed the same behavior.
Yeah. And the amazing thing is that if you keep voting because it happens to be your team, whether it's the donkeys or the elephants, for more tyranny, for more debt, for more debasement of your dollars, for more police state action and more foreign interventions that have significant blowback, first of all, you'll diminish your military capacity for when there is an actual defensive threat that needs to be met because you've spread your force too thin. Your debt is too high, which means you can't afford to maintain the military force, and you've established a police state at home that is extremely profitable for the private prisons and the private camera monitoring and the private drone manufacturers, that it will need to be implemented. Well, if the enemy is not overseas, then you will become the enemy. So we're sowing the seeds of our own destruction by pitting ourselves against each other as opposed to furthering the agenda of liberty. And Ron Paul, I would argue Ron Paul more than Newt Gingrich, although throughout the entire season I was for Newt Gingrich because of the fact of what he's done before, the fact that he's effective, the fact that he gets things done in Washington, and he moved the ball in the right direction. But Ron Paul proved that the message of liberty unites. And you want to talk to me about, you know, white guys? Come on. Ron Paul is a 76-year-old white guy. He's from Texas. But the people that he inspired in the revolution are from every race, tribe, creed, national background. The message of liberty united. And the fact is, that's the essence of what we have to take. Now, Ron Paul is retired. He's not running for office. I believe that he's taken his honorary chairmanship of Campaign for Liberty back again, so he's certainly going to be out there promoting the cause of liberty, but he's no longer the candidate. It's time to start looking at Constitution Party candidates, at Robbie Wells, at whoever is going to come up in the Libertarian Party. But we have to move beyond this partisan politics, and that doesn't mean you don't get involved in the Republican Party. You certainly should. Just get rid of these guys that we talked about earlier. But we've got to build a coalition of freedom, and then the most important aspect of this is the solutions are not going to come from Washington, D.C. The solutions are going to have to come from the states. The states have the power to manage the way elections go. The states have the power to nullify and negate extra constitutional laws, and the state is supposed to represent you. So you need to get in touch with your local representatives, your delegates, your senators, your governors, your elections boards, and you're going to have to get them to open up the election process. They need to make it easier for people to get on ballots. They need to make it less expensive for people to get on ballots. We need to go back to paper and pen ballots where you write in the name of your candidate. Those are the kinds of things that we have to do. So that's the activity that we're on, and I think that this is where people who supported Newt Gingrich, people who supported Ron Paul, people who supported Gary Johnson, people who supported Virgil Goode, this is where we can all find agreement. Now, we might not necessarily agree on which party and which candidate and all that stuff. That's fine. That's what primaries are for. That's what caucuses are for. That's what conventions are for. But we're all in agreement on the fact that conservative principles, the Constitution and liberty, has to be given a public forum so that we can move forward and restore the republic. So you've got to get the elections fixed, and you got to get active on that now because we need to upset Congress in 2014 so that we can be ready to put a true conservative liberty candidate in place in 2016. And speaking of liberty candidates, I believe we have one of our old friends on the line, Tex, and I believe that we're talking to Ron Paul. Ron Paul, are you there? Joe, open your mic.
Am I here? Did you link me in yet?
You're in, man.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to
Joe
the show.
Joe Blaze, everyone.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I thought you were just talking about something very important there, that we ought to get the states to get back. You know, if it's a states' rights issue, even the Electoral College, at the state level, we need to get them to make it easier for other candidates or even just write in. Every ballot should be counted no matter who you write in, whether they're even actually running for president or not. But, you know, that's my opinion. But either way, I don't know why we allow our state to be a part of this criminal federal organization that elects our president. It should be simple to go to the people that we directly elect and tell them.
Well, Joe, as we saw last night, you know, we all used to be citizens of our state. We were state citizens first. And the United States was the union of the states. And then that all changed, and now we're citizens of the federal government. And everything goes straight to them, and we do not have sovereign states anymore, and that's a problem. And I agree with you. If you go into the voting booth, you should be able to write in anyone's name that you want. You should be able to write in your own name if you want. You know, there should be no limitation.
Yeah, well, it should be up to your state, I guess. There might be a more in-depth argument that you'd have to go to the federal level to make the argument that you could do anything you wanted. But your state could set rules. Whatever rules they set, you either live on them or move to a different state. You have options that way. You know, I think that's a very important thing that I believe it was Rex. I get you guys' voices mixed up every now and then. It's just hitting on our state level. I don't understand how we're – it itself or them themselves get so caught up in the federal thing when it really is, we should be able to have the state, if it wants, and the people of the state want their state, to just pick somebody's name out of a hat and have their electors go vote for him. That should be up to the state to do. But no, our states just, you know, cower in the corner and follow whatever the federal government tells them to do.
And Joe, the reason for that is because of this topsy-turvy screwy taxation system we've got, where it's an income tax, which is illegal under the Constitution, even with the 16th Amendment, because what it does is it completely penetrates into your privacy, into your life, into your property, in order to extort money from you, and we send it to D.C., and then D.C. sends it back after its bureaucratic cut to the states with all the strings. And so what we need to do is simultaneously work on revising our tax structure so that the money flows from the states to D.C. rather than the other way around, and the only way that's going to happen is we've got to repeal the 17th Amendment so that we can get state representation back in Washington, where we have more power, because obviously in our state, our voice is louder than it is across a nation of 315 million people. And Joe, I think we got somebody online who can kind of get into this a little bit, because we have the vice chairman of the Constitution Party, Gunny. Your mic is live.
Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me well?
You sound sure great. Can. How's it going?
It's probably fine, Gunny.
Well, thank you. I actually swapped out my mic. I don't have to keep swapping out batteries and having a battery die for my wireless. So I've been messing with the settings, and I just wanted to make sure it was all good. But has Chris been on here tonight?
Chris was here earlier, but I hadn't opened up the mics yet.
Okay. Well, we actually did a show with him and another good friend of mine, Dan Sheridan, today, and it was called The Aftermath and Beyond the Election. And, you know, what was interesting is I looked up the word aftermath, and it's interesting that aftermath says it is the consequences of a disaster or a catastrophe, and
Randy, that's true, because I saw that show. It had Jamie Farr in it playing Corporal Klinger after he came back from Korea, and it was absolutely a disaster. That was after MASH.
After MASH, yeah. You know, but we talked about a lot of things, but here's one of the things that has been really kind of disturbing to me. I don't know if you guys saw what Cynthia Davis numbers were, but Cynthia Davis was our lieutenant governor candidate in Missouri. Now, get this.
Right.
She was a four-time elected state representative as a Republican there in Missouri. And she was elected, or not elected, she was awarded an award for being the most constitutional legislator in the state of Missouri. She got several endorsements, and one of those being from the Federation of Right to Life. And, you know, she picked a race, the lieutenant governor's race, with the strategy of, okay, I know and understand that people will be all freaked out about we've got to vote for the lesser of two evils in the governor's race, but it's the lieutenant governor's race, so kind of who cares? And, you know, I campaigned with her over there in Missouri a couple of times, and I'm telling you, I met people from all over Missouri who knew who Cynthia Davis was, and every single one of them admired and respected her. And of all the races across this nation for the Constitution Party, I sincerely felt that Cynthia Davis had a real shot at winning the election. And come to find out, she only got 2% of the vote, with the Libertarian being at 3%. And then we move over to the Bernie DeCastro race. And, you know, Bernie DeCastro being the sheriff candidate for the county that he's in, was endorsed by Sheriff Mack, endorsed by the governor, Jeb Bush. He's received many other endorsements. And get this, his competition, his opponent, wasn't even the guy whose name was on the ballot. The guy whose name was on the ballot resigned and dropped out of the race because of some garbage that he got caught doing. And so he dropped out of the race, but it was too late to reprint the ballots. So the guy who filled the vacancy, his name wasn't even on the ballot. So now here it is. Bernie DeCastro is running for an office against the guy who doesn't even have his name on the ballot, or the guy whose name on the ballot doesn't even exist anymore in terms of a campaign, and the Republican guy who's, when people cast their vote for the Republican, they cast their vote for a name that did not exist. And guess what? He got 74% of the vote, where Bernie only got 26. Something, you know, and then let's top this off with, you know, the debates, the polls that followed the debates after the Romney and Obama debates. You all know that, you know, the first time 47% of the people said neither, and then the second time 52% of the people said neither. All of you all know, I mean, and then I go to this debate, the third party debate there in Chicago, and, you know, for the first time ever, it was historic how many people came and filled that auditorium for this third party debate. I'm giving you all of this background to say there is an unprecedented interest in third parties. People saying we can't take our candidate, where they suck and it's horrible. And with all of this level of dissatisfaction, I am telling you, the votes that we received did not reflect that dissatisfaction and what we were hearing from the voters. And I'm just kind of at an absolute quandary as how it is possible that Cynthia Davis did so bad, that Bernie DeCastro did so bad. And I'm just kind of curious if any of y'all have talked about it, or if there's some thoughts on this, because it's just mind-boggling, bizarre that there's such dissatisfaction, yet the votes don't even come close to reflecting it.
Well, Randy,
before we get into that, I just want to inform you that we're in the last 8 minutes of live airtime, and Tex and I will need the 3 minutes at the top of the hour to close out for our current live listeners. And we're probably going to go in overtime, but whoever, and we won't go more than 30 minutes in overtime, but whoever wants to listen to the show after the next 8 minutes, you have to call in before the show goes into overtime. That's 646-649-1013. I won't be able to open up any more mics because my console is so full I can barely keep track of what I got now, but you can listen to the show. And, of course, if you're listening in archives, just keep listening. It'll keep flowing through, but I just want to sign off in about 6 minutes. So to you, Tex, and then whoever else wants to comment about this, Joe and Robert, and then back to me in about 5 minutes to close out, and then we'll continue. Go ahead, Tex.
Yeah, what we were saying is that, you know, people, they were sort of disillusioned by this whole thing, but they keep buying into the narrative that, you know, and I was reading articles that date back all the way to 2011 where Mitt Romney is the most electable. Remember that argument? Oh, yeah, look how electable he is.
Yep.
We've been warning you. I started really getting involved in this thing in early March, late February of this year, you know, saying that Mitt Romney can't win. Mitt Romney can't win. Stop. People need to stop voting for him. They're buying into a lie. But they didn't know what to do, and they were told on TV that Mitt Romney's the inevitable winner, you know, or he's the inevitable nominee, and he's the most electable. So they voted for him, even though they didn't like him. And then throughout the summer, we continued to talk to these people, and I said, well, I don't really like Mitt Romney, but he's the inevitable nominee. He's the most electable one, you know, so he's the lesser of two evils. Well, no, he's not the lesser of two evils. He's the lesser of two liberals. And if you run two liberals, liberals always win. But you're not a liberal, so why are you voting for a liberal? And then what did these people do in the general election? They voted for a liberal. You know, they voted for Mitt Romney. So they voted for him in the primary. They voted for him in the general. But they don't like him. How is this behavior working out for you? How is the Stockholm syndrome working out for you? And what we're trying to do is encourage people to realize that they are in their own self-made prison. Just because the people on TV tell you to do something doesn't mean that you need to do it. I don't have television anymore. I got rid of it because it's a waste of time. I'm paying for, you know, over God, I had DirecTV, so I don't even know how many channels I had, 500 or something. And he would just flip channel over and over. It's like there's nothing. It's a vast wasteland. There were only like three channels you would actually watch. And even then, half the time he came in the middle of the show and it sucked. So the thing is, stop listening to what the people on TV say. Start standing up for what you actually believe. Start voting for your own interest, whether everyone else is doing it or not, right? Look at what happens to people who stand up against the tide of history. A huge horde of people will become upset with you because you're not doing what they're doing, but they're doing the wrong thing. You don't have to do the wrong thing with them. You can do the right thing, and you will be confident knowing that you're doing the right thing, and you can convince others to do it, and that's how you affect change. You don't affect change by surrendering what you actually believe in order to go along with the herd.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think one other additional part of that, though, is the key that I'll make this real quick and short, is that I think to a large degree there was the issue of fear-mongering, and I think the fear-mongering at the top level there really, you know, just kind of drifted down into the lower segments of the ballot, and that it, you know, that fear-mongering had its overall effect of, you know, destroying all the other candidates.
Yep.
Yeah, they thought that was going to be enough to carry them across the finish line, and I said it's not. There's not enough fear out there of Obama to convince Democrats to leave their party to vote for your party because they're afraid of Obama, unless you have something that you're standing for, and Mitt Romney stood for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. There was no contrast. All he did was, we played a clip that you probably missed, where he was agreeing with Barack Obama on almost everything in foreign policy on that debate.
I can bring that clip back up, and then we'll do our closing thoughts, and then we'll go into 30 minutes of overtime. But real quick, I want to talk about, you know, doing the right thing just requires a little bit of courage. It isn't that technically difficult, and I believe Joe, I believe you did what you felt you had to do in the election yesterday, and they probably didn't make it too easy for you up there in your state. But why don't you go ahead and tell us, did you have any trouble voting?
I didn't have any trouble voting. I just live in a small township, so it's pretty simple to go in. But I wore my Ron Paul shirt in, and I voted. I wrote Ron Paul in for president, as did my mom. I'm so proud of that. My mom wrote Ron Paul in. And not necessarily simply that she wrote Ron Paul in, but it's that she was taking a step back from the establishment and actually getting on board with the Liberty Movement. So, no, voting weren't good for me. I didn't vote for too many people or items on the ballot. I voted no on all. We had six proposals to change our Constitution. I voted no on all of those, and none of them passed. So, as far as I had one guy that I was backing in a different township for township supervisor, and he lost by 162 votes. And he actually lives in my mom and dad's township. And he lost by 162 votes, ran as a Republican, and we are all Democrat. I will bet 90% of the positions that were up yesterday in my township didn't even have a Republican running for them. So out of 3,200 votes, he only lost by 162. So a lot of people are very happy that there seems to be maybe a change in their community over there, their township. So I'm going to stick around. I got some things to some notes I took here that I want to talk about after you close out. So.
Well, definitely stick
around. Sounds good. We've got 2 minutes before we lose our live listeners. So anybody who wants to listen, call in now, 646-649-1013. I won't be able to open up any more mics, but you'll be able to listen to the show live. We've got a minute and a half before Tex and I have to close out. So what I'm going to do is play that clip that he talked about, courtesy of John Stewart.
I congratulate him on taking out Osama bin Laden. Drones are being used in drone strikes, and I support that entirely and feel the president was right. I want to underscore the same point the president made. I felt the same as the president did. I supported his action there. It's absolutely the right thing to do to have crippling sanctions.
Wow, it's amazing. And I mentioned this earlier. It's been a while since I've been in a debate, but I used to debate, and I don't think that I ever scored any points in a debate by agreeing with my opponent. I think that kind of defeats the entire purpose of debate. But I don't know if Willard Mitt Romney realized that. But what I want to tell everybody is, however you're feeling about the election, whether you're cheering because Obama won or you're in knots because Romney didn't, just keep in mind that nothing truly has changed, because the very simple fact is that yesterday it wasn't America that won. We lost. Goldman Sachs won, and the empire is back. So instead of fearing the empire, it's time for the rise of the Liberty Rebel Alliance. And that's you. And don't think that you're going to wait till 2014 to do anything about it. Take action tomorrow. It's time to get signatures for third parties. It's time to reform both of the other parties. And it's time to change the ballot access in your state right now so we can recover in 2014 and 2016. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.
All
okay,
right.
So
we've lost our live
time.
Listeners. We're in recording time. We got about 30 minutes, so why don't we go ahead and go to Tex first, and then we'll take it to Joe. He had some ideas he wanted to bring up, and then we'll throw it to Robert and then Randy.
Thanks, Rex. I'm just going to say, you know, based on that clip that we heard where Romney was agreeing with Barack Obama on foreign policy being the one area that I have heard Romney quote supporters who hate Romney but are going to vote for him, so they're quote supporters, say that, well, he'll be better on foreign policy. We see that there's vast agreement, and I'm just shocked as I listen to that, that all these Obama supporters didn't hear that Mitt Romney agreed with Obama and say, oh, Romney agrees with Obama, so I'm not going to vote for Obama, and I'm going to vote for Romney because he agrees with Obama. I'm just shocked that people wouldn't make that choice. I don't understand. Are people irrational?
Is that a rhetorical question?
Exactly. I mean, that's what I'm getting back to. If you don't draw the contrast, which is what Newt Gingrich said, right? You don't win by running our guy versus their guy. You win by running our vision of the world versus their vision of the world. And you will always win if you have the courage to do that. Mitt Romney did not have the courage to draw the contrast. He wanted to show that he was a nice guy and that he agreed with Obama. Well, people don't leave Obama for a guy who agrees with Obama. That doesn't make any sense. And yet he paid millions of dollars, and there are people all across this country, Republicans, you know, good-minded Republicans who paid millions of dollars to support this candidate who thought that that was a good strategy, when any rational person could look at that and just tell you right away that you're going to lose. You know? I mean, you're going to lose. And yet people got paid millions of dollars to tell them to do this stuff.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Tex, you're absolutely right. And, I mean, the same thing actually happened in 1924. A lot of people don't know this, but in 1924, we had Silent Cal Coolidge as the incumbent president, and the economy was doing pretty well. Unlike now, it wasn't doing terrible, it was doing well. And the Democrats actually, for the last time in their history, ran a conservative candidate after their initial flirtation with progressivism. They ran a conservative candidate, Davis. And Davis was so similar to Calvin Coolidge that people just thought, well, you know, why would we switch now? Things are pretty good, so we'll just stick with the guy we know. It's the same phenomenon in reverse. People are just saying things are absolutely terrible now, and the opposition seems to be very similar to what we already have. Let's just stick with the guy who's screwing it up now rather than get another guy who might screw it up even more. And you know, you don't win elections by running the same. You win elections by running somebody who's doing something different and the opposition. So, Joe, what do you have on your mind?
I'm not sure who it was. His name was Gunny. It spoke earlier about the guy in Florida, sheriff in Florida, and such that, excuse me, didn't get the votes that they thought maybe they should have been Liberty candidates. And yesterday we were discussing how, I'm not sure, I haven't seen any of the official numbers, but how the Liberty Movement or the third-party candidates only got 1% or somewhere around 1% of all the votes. And I really just can't see that happened. I think in the last one, if my little bit of research I did before I came on here came up, Ralph Nader got about 0.8%. and nobody else really got enough to add up to anything. So in all of our efforts in the last 4 years, we only gained 0.2%, which is actually still way down over what Ross Perot did. So it just makes me question the Diebold machines all that much more. You know, I'm into questioning everything. So I just can't believe that we only got third party candidates only got 1% of the vote.
Well, Joe, I have to agree with you. And the official tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theory card carrying member of the Texan Rex team, I will tell you that I distrust Diebold, I distrust Skytel, and I distrust Hart, InterCivic, and any of the other machines. In fact, I'm not even sure why you need a machine to, you know, maybe you can use them to count the votes, but it should always be people and they should be paper ballots. That's my feeling. I mean, if you look at what happened when we imposed democracy at the end of a gun in Iraq, we made them vote and dip their fingers in indelible purple ink so that they couldn't vote again and screw up the votes. And yet over here, we do everything by computers that can be hacked, and we actually have testimony of people who've written programs, specifically hired to write programs to put algorithms that can't be detected by election boards to rig elections. So I think we need to move away from that. I think that's a valid point. The person that you were referring to is actually Gunny, but his name is Randy Stufflebean of the Constitution Party. He's actually the national vice chairman. So, Randy, did you want to comment on the turnout? And incidentally, I think that Gary Johnson secured something around 1.4 million votes, which is, I believe, the most that a Libertarian Party candidate has ever achieved in their 40-year history. It's to you, Randy.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. First of all, you know, Tex had said Romney didn't have the courage. I don't think it had anything to do with courage. I think it had everything to do with intent. That first comment. Secondly is, you know, and this was one of the other things I was going to bring up, and I'm kind of glad that you did mentioned Gary Johnson. I mean, it's bizarre to me. Gary Johnson in Colorado, okay? Colorado passed the dope smoking law, you know, that Gary Johnson was so fond of. And so here it is. Even in Colorado, Gary Johnson on the ballot as a dope smoker himself only gets 2% of the vote. There is something entirely wrong. Now, fortunately, I will say that here, at least in our county, we do fill out paper ballots. They are electronically counted, but there's at least the advantage of having a paper trail there. And so, you know, at least thank God we've got that here in St. Clair County. But, you know, I said this several weeks ago, that I was just done with the election, and I'm excited about some of the things that are transpiring and some of the excitement that is starting to develop. And two things, if you don't mind me putting a little plug in, next week I am going to be starting, and it's probably going to be somewhere between 9:30 and 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to start running Constitutionally Correct on a consistent basis. I have for the past several weeks, three or four weeks since I've gotten to know you guys, I've kind of let my show go by the wayside just because I felt it was so important to talk with you all and to deal with the issues. And you guys were doing a great job of interviewing the candidates, so I figured I'd just let you do my job for me for a while.
We appreciate, you know, that.
It worked out pretty well.
We demand a fee for doing your job.
Every Wednesday I had what I called Constitution Party Campaign Central, but basically you guys took that over for me. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. We'll just work on that. But I will be starting on a regular and consistent basis. I didn't want to interfere with all of what you guys are doing, but we're going to start going on the educational rampage and start teaching people what it really means to be an American and what it really means to cast your vote for principle and for liberty. And I think we had a great first show today, just kind of get things kind of started to get it ironed out and laid out. And lastly is that it looks, and as time goes along, I'm probably going to be running for the U.S. Senate against, well, Dick Durbin is, I've heard, is not going to be running, but for the U.S. Senate here in Illinois. And, you know, the time, and you guys have mentioned this, today is the day to start getting candidates and starting to say we are going to find candidates and recruit them in all of these jurisdictions, because we cannot wait for 2 years, because the Republicans and Democrats already have a huge, huge, huge lead on us, and the race hasn't even started. So we've got to start planning to be successful, and we've got to start planning our strategies, and we've got to start laying these down, because I don't think our country is going to last that much longer unless we start having some significant victories. God bless you all, and thanks a lot.
All right. Well, Randy, thank you so much. We're very excited about your run for the Senate there in Illinois. And we're excited that your show is up and running. Tex and Rex, now that the build-up to the election is over, will be broadcasting Sundays at, for the most part, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 Central. So check us out starting this Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central. And, Randy, what time is your show and what days are you broadcasting?
Well, my show is going to be broadcast 5 days a week, and it's most likely going to start at 10 o'clock, and the first 45 minutes, actually, but about the first half of the show will be set up to be broadcast on Liberty Works Radio Network, because they're being picked up by 3 live radio stations, and so I've got to do the first part of it in 3 segments, and I've got to do it about 3 15-minute segments. And then what we're going to do is start interviewing people. We're going to start talking about the issues and get that, so that can be broadcast on Liberty Works Radio Network. And then following that particular setup, then we are going to open the second half of that up for further discussion. Like I've interviewed Jerome Corsi and Tom DeWeese, the foremost expert on Agenda 21, DV Kid, and we'll bring them on, and if they can stay on, great. If not, we'll still continue on talking about the issues, or even open it up for other issues. So I'm really trying to work out the details so we can start really making effect and start educating our people and getting them excited about taking on 2014.
Excellent. That's very exciting,
Randy,
news.
And Randy, did you say that was a.m. or p.m.?
That would be a.m. So 10 o'clock a.m. in the morning. One of the reasons is I've got a good friend, Dan Sheridan, who actually helped me out on the maiden voyage, my very first broadcast. And then he's actually into broadcasting, was on the radio, but he's now gotten hired on with watchdog.org, and they're actually paying him a salary to be a journalist. And so he's coming on board, bringing a lot of his expert knowledge and history and the stuff that he's researched. Chris Shipler was with us this morning. In fact, I'd like to bring you guys on when you have the opportunity, and really start blowing the doors open on all this.
That sounds exciting. And Randy, will this also be available on Blog Talk Radio archive, so people can listen to it if they can't tune in at 10 a.m.?
Absolutely. Everything is going. Now, what I do is I actually take the show, especially that first 45 minutes, those 3 15-minute segments, I bring them down, edit them down so that they're ready for broadcast. And then what I do is I re-upload that so that you get the professional quality sound of the show. And but that's all archived on Blog Talk. It's archived on constitutionallycorrect.org, where you can listen to all those from that particular venue as well.
Excellent. And just to remind everybody who's listening, when you find a show you like Constitutional Conservative or Tex and Rex or Bard's Logic, right under the show icon, you can click the follow button, and you will receive notifications in your Blog Talk Radio profile and affiliated email as to when the broadcasts are. And you can always listen to the archives and download the MP3s and share them with all your friends to get the word out.
And speaking of Blog Talk Radio times, Robert Jetter broadcasts Bard's Logic Political Talk. Robert, do you know what your schedule is, and would you like to tell everybody where they can go to hear your show?
Sure. And now that the election is over, the schedule is going to change a little bit. On Sunday evenings, I'm going to hopefully move back from 8 p.m. till 10 p.m. Eastern time on Sundays. And that would be before the Texan Rec Show. And then Monday through Thursday, it would continue to be from 10 p.m. to midnight.
Monday okay, so that's Thursday. 8 p.m. Eastern on Sundays, 10 p.m. Eastern Monday through Thursday, correct?
Right.
Okay, and that's Bard's Logic Political Talk, so make sure you check that out. Well, Robert, I've only given you an opportunity to plug your show, but if you had any comments about what we've been talking about to proceed, please go right ahead, and then we're going to go to Tex, and then I'm going to give everybody some final thoughts, and we'll close out at about 12:30.
Well, real quick, as you said, there's only 15 minutes left. So I just made a comment today to some folks, like my wife and, you know, just people I know. It just amazes me how much money was spent on this election, not only for the general election, but all the money and all that was done to get Romney the nomination. For us, the day after the election, and then when we move forward on January 20th of 2013, to be right where we started, nothing has changed. All that money spent, all that time and effort, all the chicanery, lies, people has had their bones broken, and in my opinion, for naught, because we are exact in the same place that we were, you know, before it all started. You have the Senate, with the Democrats control the Senate, the Republicans control the House, and you have Obama as president. What has changed? So I think we're going to have to do something to different so that there will be a change next time, starting in 2014. Thank you very much for letting me plug Bard's Logic and come on to the show and get work, some words out. So thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you, Robert, and thank you for keeping the voice of liberty alive. Text to you, and then I want to go to Joe.
Well, I would just say I was trying to dig up a clip from Newt Gingrich talking about, I was hoping I could solve for time and find the clip in time, but I was unable to. But what he said, and it's true, and he talked about how we lost in 2006, okay? We lost the Congress, right? And we lost the House, and we lost the Senate, and we lost everything else. And he said to his audience, this is the Restoration Weekend speech, that many of you gave money to these campaigns. And he said, money spent without purpose in a campaign without an argument is a waste of money. And that, my friends, is what just occurred. The Mitt Romney campaign was money spent without purpose in a campaign without an argument. We just heard clips of Mitt Romney agreeing with Barack Obama on nearly everything. He didn't have an argument. His argument was, I'm not Barack Obama. And idiots in the Republican Party leadership thought that that was going to be good enough to get them over the top because they would create such a bogeyman out of Barack Obama that they would win. It was a catastrophic failure. And you know what? In order to cover for their multi-billion-dollar failure, I mean, how much money actually was going into the Romney campaign? You know, I mean, over the years, the guy's been running for 4 years, ever since he lost in 2008. He's been running. This thing cost billions of dollars. You talk about the PAC money, billions of dollars. So to cover for their failure, who are they blaming? You. And how are they blaming you? They're saying, oh, you're the old white guy party, and that's not going to win. We got to have new faces. Okay, we had the youth vote in Ron Paul. Okay, we had the bedrock core conservatives in the Gingrich supporters, right? Who did you guys run? You ran Mitt Romney. What is he? A 1% Wall Street white guy, right? And now we're the terrible people. okay? That's so wrong. You're accusing us of of causing your failure or of being the object of what caused you not to succeed. What caused you not to succeed is you don't believe in the Constitution, you don't believe in limited government, you don't believe in getting government out of our lives, you don't believe in returning this nation back to the rule of law and to the principles of liberty. You believe in more government spending, more government regulation, inflating our way out of problems until the dollar is completely worthless because you think that's a successful strategy. And you ran a candidate who basically is ideologically, you know, unidentifiable against Mitt Romney because they're exactly the same. You can't tell which is which, and you thought that was successful. And now you blame us for it. But the thing is, the day of reckoning has occurred, and the election was held, and you got lost in a landslide, and you lost because we told you early on that you weren't going to win, and you kept saying, no, 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 but we will win because we're going to scare you so much that you're just going to vote for Romney anyway, and you didn't scare anyone. And you know who you scared? Yourselves, because now you got to blame us. And you're going to play pin the tail on the donkey here? Well, you're the donkey, and it's time to start getting these people out of the party or to leave the party altogether.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how that plays out. I think until we know exactly which direction has the most success for the conservative cause and the cause of liberty, then I think that you know, you employ a both and as opposed to an either or strategy. So, you know, work in the Republican Party where you have some leeway. I know the Ron Paul Revolution and the Liberty Movement has 11 states, I think, where they're in the Central Committee and they're making a push there. Work in your local, you know, Republican precinct. Look at the Constitution Party. Give them a call. Find out how you can help. The idea is that conservatism, the Constitution, liberty is the purpose. Whatever means we can use to get there, those are the means. And it is very important that you get involved in your state, in your with your delegates, with your senators, with the Elections Commission to get the rules changed so that we actually have free and fair and open debate and ballot access for 2014 and 2016. Most people in this country identify as independents. Most people in this country identify as conservatives. There is absolutely no reason why we keep voting for non-conservative, non-constitutional, non-liberty candidates. Joe, did you want to go ahead and comment?
Well, I guess that was a good segue into what I was going to say. You got to start now, just like Randy said. It's not that easy to become a third-party candidate, at least at the presidential level, in any state. So if there's going to be a candidate now, I think at a grassroots level, we need to start getting that person on the ballots in all the state, collecting the signatures. There's a lot of signatures to be collected. I don't understand why people wait until, like, the last 2 years. Or even later than that, but then that's it.
Well, because X Factor is on, Joe. X Factor is on, and so is the Super Bowl, and you know these things are important. So we don't have time to do it with politics until about, you know, 36 minutes before we go vote on Election Day. Well, I think that that's a cultural problem, and those of us who are aware have a responsibility to get other Americans engaged, because a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm not really that into politics, and I'm very busy, and it doesn't matter all that much to me. But, you know, I'm a good citizen, so I'm going to go ahead and go vote once every 4 years. Well, let me break it to you. We have elections every single year for something in your neighborhood, and you've got to get active all the time, because if you do or do not have an interest in politics, that's quite irrelevant. It's not a spectator sport. It is the business of citizenship, and believe me, politics has a significant interest in you and your life. And if you don't get involved and you don't get interested and you don't start fighting for liberty, you are going to voluntarily make yourself a slave of the oligarchs, the corporatists, and the Keynesians. So get off your duff and get involved. Why don't we go to Randy now?
Wow. Yeah, hey, Rex, you said it a perfect. In fact, what was amazing is, you know, we've only known each other, you know, via this medium for just a few weeks. And you know, I was saying this earlier when I introduced Chris to the Constitutionally Correct show, is that, you know, one of the reasons why we are so well connected is because we are connected on the basis of truth and principles. And those truths and those principles are trans, you know, they transcend everything. It's why, you know, the foundation that created this country is still a viable foundation, because those principles never change. And so it's certainly great to hear you talk, you know, say some of those things, because I have voiced exactly the same thing. And folks, you know, I'm going to be out there pushing people. I'm going to be out there saying, hey, follow me. I may not do everything great, but we're going to be moving. And, you know, it's kind of like you create a plan, and you know that along the way, the plan is going to have to be adjusted. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to move forward. We're going to take this battle to the enemy, because we have no other alternatives if we want to see this country survive.
Well, that's a great message, Randy, and we appreciate all the work you've done and the work that you continue to do. And I strongly recommend everybody listen, whether you are a Republican who's disenfranchised by the party and are really a conservative, but you held your nose and voted for Mitt Romney, whether you are inspired by Ron Paul and you wrote in Ron Paul, even if you voted Gary Johnson, whatever it is that you did in this election, I strongly urge you, take a look at your options. Go ahead to the Constitution Party website and take a look at that platform and start learning about that party. And don't ignore the Republican Party, because that has been the home of conservatism for quite a long time. It is the party that ran Goldwater, and we had President Reagan, and we had the conservative revolution in 94 with Newt Gingrich. It's the party where the Ron Paul revolution found its home, and it is the party that Ron Paul has been in for a very long time, far longer than Democrat Mitt Romney. But, you know, look at all of your options and find out where you fit, where you can work, where you can be effective. Because every one of us can do something, and it is your responsibility as a citizen to get involved in order to keep this country free. And the day to start is today.
Absolutely.
2014
if I may,
is not that far off. Go ahead, Randy.
If I may just add one little thing, what's interesting is there's a man by the name of Chief Justice Roy Moore, and he was really the reason and the impetus as to why I got involved when I saw what was being done to him, and, you know, contrary to everything that I knew and understood and loved about this country, that they took this guy from the Chief Justice position over an issue of religious issues. This is the federal government intruding on a state issue. Well, he was reelected to the the Chief Justice of Alabama. And so I thought that was pretty exciting. And there's still some remnants of things. And I just wanted to say that, you know, one of the exciting things that I have discovered and I'm learning more every day is the fact that, you know, I have got friends, I have got fellow brothers at arm here, you know, that are in the Republican Party, in the Libertarian Party, and believe it or not, even in the Green Party. So we have got to build these alliances and these bridges with each other and help each other, because we together have to overcome this system. So thanks again.
All right, rock on. Thank you very much, Randy. Why don't we go to Joe Blaze for final thoughts, and then Robert Jetter, and then Tex and I will go ahead and close it out. Go ahead, Joe.
So I think my only final thoughts are you guys are doing a great job, and I'm damn proud to have met you. It sounds like we've gotten over the Gingrich-Ron Paul disparity at the beginning and kind of formed a nice alliance that I think will move forward.
Rock on.
Absolutely, Joe. And the thing is, if we're going to reform the Republican Party, we got to have the Ron Paul movement just roll in like a steamroller and get this thing back. And I'm looking at 2014 as an indicator. And, you know, if that fails, if this Republican Party is unable to reform itself, then it's time we got to do something new.
Well, I'm an advocate of both inside and outside. You know, I'm very much outside. I've never been a Republican or a Democrat. Earlier you said we all lost. something. But having never been a Republican or a Democrat, I didn't lose anything in yesterday's election. Probably gained something, if nothing else. But I am an elected delegate, so I have a constituency for the next 2 years, an elected state state delegate, precinct delegate in my state. So I have a constituency for the next 2 years, so I'm not going to give up on the Republican Party, at least changing it for that long. But I am an advocate of, like you guys talk about a lot, take it over from both the inside and outside. There's no reason. I know there's a little bit of divisiveness in our movement. Some people just want to abandon it altogether, and I see no reason why not to have people on both inside and outside. So,
Yeah,
exactly.
I agree.
We'll always have two strategies. I mean, try the inside track, but build yourself a lifeboat too. And you know, come what may, you'll always be okay that way.
That's right. And Tex and Joe,
I'm pretty active in both parts of it. I advocate outside of it, but I am a Republican delegate, and I will fulfill my duty, and whatever comes up in 2 years for the Congress, I will go there as a Republican.
Fantastic. Well, Joe and Tex, I want to echo what both of you just said.
Justin Amash. I'm going to get a plug-in for him.
All right. Sounds good, Justin Amash. Well, Joe and Tex, just to echo what you both said, you know, the ability for those of us who supported Gingrich and those of us who supported Ron Paul and those of us who are in the Libertarian Party and those of us who are Ron Paul Republicans and those of us who are conservative Republicans in the Reagan-Gingrich mold and those of us who are fighting for liberty on all fronts, those of us in the Constitution Party, the common unity is the Constitution and liberty. And we will have differences, but that's the whole reason we have the Constitution and the structure we have, so that we can have vigorous, even contentious debate, so that we can put forward the best ideas. But where we agree is that it has to be under the banner of the Constitution, and it has to be done openly and fairly where everybody has a voice. That's how liberty moves. It doesn't mean you agree with everybody else. I certainly don't agree with Gary Johnson on most things, but I applaud what he did. Because it is important to have multiple voices. I agree with Jill Stein on just about zero, but I applaud that she's out there debating and putting forward her ideas. I think they're completely, you know, baseless and they're very easy to defeat, but she should have her voice heard, and so should the people who agree with her. So if we take the inside track and the outside track, well, the Republicans will either respond and become more conservative and become more constitutionalist, or they won't. But if you're also working in the Libertarian Party, the Constitution Party, wherever else freedom can be found, then we'll always have a place to go to make the voice heard. So, Joe, I appreciate you calling in. I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate your working within the Republican Party, representing your precinct and your constituency. And I applaud you for taking a principled stance and also for getting your mom to do the same.
Well, thank you. Especially on the mom part. I am damn proud of that.
Excellent. All right. Thanks, Joe. Robert, why don't we go to you for final thoughts, and then Tex and I will close it out.
Okay. I see it's past the 12:30 mark, and you guys want to end at that time, so I'll just make it a brief quote from one of my favorite movies, which is Alexander the Great. It says, "Fear not, my friend, for we are at the beginning." That's all. Thank you.
Amen. Thanks, Robert. We'll see you around. Tex, to you for final thoughts, and then we'll close it out.
Yeah, just my final thoughts. You know, I just want to sum up, you know, we've come through a process here, and some of us saw what was happening early on, and we chose to ignore the warning signs. So I have two very quick clips that I will share with you, and I'm going to do this over my own mic. So hopefully they come through. They may be too loud because I turned the volume up, so I apologize for that. Just take a second, but here we go. This is Newt Gingrich, 2009, What It Will Take to Win, where he talks about running a campaign without an idea like Mitt Romney.
Money spent without a purpose and a campaign without an argument is a waste of money.
There you go. That's what we just did. A campaign without an argument, and we just wasted money. But he predicted that, you know, and this goes out to the Gingrich people and the Ron Paul people, that you win by having ideas.
And those ideas have to be ideas for reform, because I think all of us thought that Obama was on the wrong path and that we needed to do something to change the path that we were on. And Newt Gingrich saw it. He called it early. Ron Paul saw it, too. And I think Gingrich articulates it very well here, very short clip.
You're not a reform party, and you're not dominating October with reform. You are going to get crushed.
Well, guess what? We were not a reform party. The Republican Party this time around was not a reform party, and we were not dominating October with reform, and you just got crushed. And you went along with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. And we got to stop doing it. And we got to stop having leadership that thinks that this type of political strategy is acceptable, because they're complete failures. We control the party because we're the base of support. And if they continue to do this, we need to deny them our support. And everyone here's got to go to a meeting at the Republican Party of your county, because it's organized by county. Go to those county meetings. It's also organized by precincts. Go to your county meetings for a start, and start raising your hand and ask an uncomfortable question, because you're never going to fix it by being a go-along-to-get-along guy. And you'll feel uncomfortable asking those uncomfortable questions, but I guarantee you 80 to 90% of the people in the room are going to think, damn straight, thank God that person said it, because I didn't have the courage to say it myself. That's how you fix it.
Right on, Tex. It's about being involved, and it's about standing up for the principles in which you believe. And you got to start now, not in 2 years. It's time to start now, because what we saw yesterday was Darth Obama reinstated on his illegitimate throne, and the empire is growing. The loss yesterday was not for the Republicans. It wasn't for Mitt Romney. The loss yesterday was for America. The victory was for Goldman Sachs, the Federal Reserve, and the transnational banksters. And it is up to you to stand up now, get involved, and defeat it. And I want you to take the words of a great man, probably the original Paul Bott. He's from my Commonwealth. His name was Thomas Jefferson. And he said, I know of no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves, not enlightened enough to exercise their control with wholesome discretion. The remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion, enlighten the people generally, and tyranny and oppressions of body and mind will vanish like evil spirits at the dawn of day. If you want the evil spirits to vanish at the dawn of day, you have to be the people. Look to your Constitution. Read the document. It starts off with, we, the people. We are those people. You are that person. Stand up for liberty. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be. I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.